It's time for Twit. We got a great panel for the first show of the new year. Ian Thompson from The Register, Alex Wilhelm from Crunchbase, Gastronomad Mike Elgin, and we will talk about CES. It's going on this week. The weird Apple earnings adjustment and what it means for the company going forward. And Mike's nice book. It's his Facebook replacement. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 700 for Sunday, January 6th, 2019. A car wash for your face. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com to find out which Atlassian tools are right for your team and give their products a try for free. And by Quip. Get a fresh start every day with Quip, the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Visit getquip.com/twit to get your first refill pack free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. And by LastPass. Make password management a priority in 2019. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business and reduce the threat of breach at lastpass.com/twit. And by ZipRecruiter. Hire qualified candidates the smart way and take your business to the next level in 2019. Try ZipRecruiter free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the week's tech news. And we have a great panel for you. We haven't seen you in about 6 months. Glad to welcome back Alex Wilhelm.
It's good to be here.
Editor-in-chief of the Crunchbase news site.
That's Alex correct. And I'm not wearing a branded t-shirt this week because I forgot to. So, in the game.
You look really good. I think married life is good for you.
Engaged life.
Engaged life. When is the wedding?
June.
Exciting.
It's coming up at last. It's
congratulations.
Been impending for some time. Thank
some
you.
People who've watched for a long time might remember we met Alex's fiance, Liza, who is going to be a psychiatrist, so that's appropriate.
Yeah, it's
actually kind of you're going to save a fortune.
You marry what you need. I feel.
And she's a doll. She's wonderful and lives in my childhood home.
Yes.
Which is bizarre, but true.
Can you just leave little Easter eggs for it? Now, if you go to the top floor, there's loose skirting behind
Alex
there.
Alex has promised to make a video because
I'm
going to
make a video and to show you what we've changed and improved.
What's different. Yeah.
So
it was there that in 1969 I watched Neil Armstrong step on the moon.
It's also there that I recently hit my head on the side of the wall. You know, I mean, every home has memories.
No. Okay. That was a British fellow by the name of Ian Thompson. He is from theregister.co.uk, where he's news editor. It's great to see you, Ian.
Always good fun.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you also. Compliments of the season.
I'm hoping many English breakfasts for you in the
year. Yes. I had good thick British bacon and eggs for breakfast this morning, I'm quite happy and reasonably content.
And drowsy. Also here, hey, we welcome him back from his gastronomad experience in Mexico City, Mike Elgin.
Yes.
So how was that, the Mexico City experience?
It was unbelievable.
New Year's Eve.
Unbelievable. It was great. We did New Year's Eve on a rooftop overlooking Zocalo Square.
Oh, fun.
And it was just like fantastic. Just great. It was really, really great.
So jealous. Anyway, we have gathered together to mourn the passing of Apple computers.
Again.
Ugh. Man, there was a lot of schadenfreude was thick in the air this week when Wednesday, Apple's Tim Cook issued a letter saying, I'm sorry, but, you know, we said we were going to have $92 billion in revenue. It's only going to be $84 billion in revenue.
We've gone from being a huge cash machine to a slightly smaller cash machine.
It did hurt their stock price. They were a trillion-dollar company in August. Their market cap, as of the last time I checked, $700 billion,
which
they're
is
only the fourth
different.
Only the fourth largest company in the world. You cover this stuff for Crunchbase.
Yeah.
I think that there's some, and everybody, including of course John Gruber, and it's funny, coming out of retirement because he couldn't resist it, MJ Siegler,
yes,
had to cover this and what the letter meant. They parsed it line by line, But give us the overview, Alex.
Well, for a long time, Apple has done a fantastic job at maintaining increased profitability despite seeing its kind of unit volume numbers stop to grow. And they did that by pushing up ASPs or average selling prices across their device lines.
And expanding into new territories like China.
Exactly. And then all that stopped working all of a sudden. They had a problem in the Chinese market. They didn't see as many upgrades as they thought they were going to. So revenue will be far lower than expected. Apple will still make a ton of money. They still have almost a quarter trillion in cash. So the company's not going anywhere, but everyone's now quite concerned about growth. And the bigger story here that kind of fits on top of the Apple bit is that if China's slowing down for Apple, what does that mean for other brands that sell into the market, luxury brands, other electronics brands, and also what does it mean for the global macroeconomic situation? So there's an Apple story, a China story, and a broader economic story. But Apple's now only worth, I just looked, $703.6 billion, so they're definitely doomed. no doubt.
There's an even bigger story, which is that, you know, since Apple has been driven by iPhone profits, sales revenue, mm-hmm. et cetera, there was always going to be a plateau and a decline of some kind because there's only so many people. Only so many people are going to pay for premium phones. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are snidely saying, oh, the whole reason is that the phones are too expensive. Just lower the price of the phones. That's not going to do it either. That's not going to help the revenue, certainly. And so it's just, you know, I've been talking about this for a couple of years.
This was going to happen. No way around.
This is why I've been predicting big new businesses like the self-driving car, like maybe they need to make Apple Pay cross-platform, something like that. They have to do something because phones aren't going to take them into the future on the same trajectory.
Apple hasn't created a significant new product since the iPad. I mean,
there's been a
pair of headphones.
The AirPods?
Oh, come on. The watch? It's a toy.
How much of Apple's revenue is watch-based? 5%, 4%, 3%?
Yeah. I mean, it's even less AirPods-based.
I bought two pairs of AirPods.
Well, I bought three because I keep losing them. But partly that's because it's dwarfed by the success of the iPhone. I mean, really, this is a problem every company would love to have, which is such a massively successful single product that it powers revenue for years, makes you a hugely valuable company. Mm-hmm. And it's always a problem because then you need a successor, a follow-up. And Apple actually has had a number of lives. I mean, if you think about it, they've had, you know, the Apple II, and then the Mac was a failure, Then they managed to make the Mac a success. Then the iPod in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. That was a huge success.
Yep.
So they have managed year after year to come up with a hit, but it has been a long time since they've come up with it. And that's because there's been nothing ever in the world as successful as the iPhone.
Well, the talk is they're going to move to services, and then Apple's going to increased unit volume.
Steve Cook said.
Yeah.
Well, Steve Cook is probably a good guy to ask about what Apple will do. The question is, how fast can they make that transition? Because they're not going to win the productivity wars. You've got Google and Microsoft. They're really butting heads. They're not going to win the cloud storage wars or the cloud computing wars. So where are they going to find a home in services that they can really expect a lot of long-term revenue growth, especially at a time in which App Store revenue cuts are under attack? You have the Fortnite App Store is going to take 12%. Apple wants 30. It feels an archaic.
Microsoft has already said they're willing to go down to 85. They're willing to take 15% from some developers as well.
Brilliant. Microsoft makes money other ways. Apple needs that revenue stream to keep growing. So I don't know what's going to happen with them in the short term.
It puts them in a little bit of a bind if they're going to rely on services. And self-driving cars, augmented reality, some of the other things Apple's talked about aren't
anywhere near ready. These are five-year down the line projects.
Yeah.
They're not even close to being ready yet.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, they said in their last quarterly financial results, we're not actually going to report on units shipped anymore, just on revenues, which was basically a sign that, we're just going to be relying on jacking up the price and profit taking.
Well,
and the existing phones are good
enough.
Another
way of spinning it is saying that the unit sales are not really what's driving income going forward. They're flat. What we're going to take a look at is how much money we make per customer. And I think that's not an unreasonable thing to do. A lot of companies do it. Microsoft doesn't break down unit sales. Google doesn't break down unit sales.
Nope.
It is maybe, especially in this new world for Apple, more appropriate to look at revenue per customer.
Well.
But look, we knew Apple was going to. I have to say, a lot of this is just schadenfreude. Oh, a trillion-dollar company. We'll show you, That's what we do. We build people up to knock them down. That's kind of the way it is.
We're not going to solve human nature on this show,
no.
But we can at least understand that it's part of it.
We can try. It is part of it.
I do have a philosophy degree.
So there's a legitimate. So you were right. Celebrate. Take a victory lap, Mike Elgin. Yes. Apple's been facing this problem for a couple of years, and they have yet to come up with a successor. I've heard people say, this is Tim Cook's fault. He hasn't come up with a follow-up. You even kind of implied that because Apple hasn't had a...
Okay, he's not quite Scully levels of bad. He's very good at keeping the business running
and making it profitable.
No, he's a great operations guy, but he's not an innovations guy. And Johnny Ive appears to have basically given up.
I think he's retired.
He's semi-retired now.
Right. So cashing checks is a full-time job.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
This is the innovator's dilemma. This is the classic dilemma for all companies, especially tech companies. Mm. It's hard to reinvent yourself many times. And Apple's done it. But
Apple's done it more than most.
More than most.
Well, one thing we should all look inside ourselves and question is how invested are we in the success of this corporation? I mean, they're iconic. Yes, Steve Jobs' career was amazing. Yes, they've impressed us. Yes, we've all been Apple fans at some point or another, but it's a corporation. Come on, why? I mean,
that's the problem, though. I think a lot of Apple fans really do have an investment.
It's about identity.
An emotional investment.
It's about identity.
Yeah. And Apple's been good at capitalizing on that. They became a fashion brand.
Yeah.
There is a limited number of people with both the passion and the money to pay the Cupertino idiot tax again and again and again every year.
I do love
their
building.
Calm down. Stop calling me an idiot on air.
Well, I just bought a Pixel 3. I moved the iPhone to the Pixel 3. And, you know, Google is selling a fraction of the Pixel phones that Apple is selling iPhones. Mm. They're probably losing money on it. It's still a great phone.
Apple sells more phones in a month than Google sold all year.
Yeah, absolutely.
But one thing that's caught my eye during this entire brouhaha was how we're behind talking about this now. If you look at global smartphone shipments over the last couple of years, they've been flat.
Coming.
We should have been expecting this.
We were. Well, we all were.
I mean, but I don't think
I've been
we
saying this for years. Okay, so Mike's suddenly. Been saying it for years.
I mean, it feels sudden. Yeah. I don't think we're shocked that there was a plateau to smartphone sales. There's a limited number of people who can afford them. But I feel like this conversation wasn't as concrete as it should have been. We should have been more honest about this. But, I mean, one problem that we have is that the old iPhones are so damn good. Or dang good. Sorry, I apologize, everyone. Like, my 7 Plus that I still have, I'm going to keep it till it dies. Because why would I ever change it?
Took advantage. This is one of the factors Tim Cook mentioned in his letter. Took advantage of the battery replacement.
Yeah.
$29. He said we got more people than we thought would do that, and that those people did not upgrade. She calls her iPhone 6 her beloved iPhone 6.
Oh. Yeah.
Does not want to change it. She likes having a headphone jack.
Exactly.
The new battery made it as fast as it, you know, as it ever was.
Yeah. This is the iPad problem that they've had. The iPads are so durable and long lasting. It's like, who needs a new one? It's really not that different. Mm. And with that battery replacement, it was so inexpensive. It's such a no brainer. It kind of turned iPhones into iPads because that battery was the thing that started killing you after a couple of years. You
right.
know? And so, yeah.
And that does raise the issue if Apple did that on purpose, because Apple was slowing down phones. They got caught, but they were slowing down phones with older batteries.
But here, again, is an unmitigated benefit to consumers and the environment, because phones that are manufactured, the better it is for them.
These are not recyclable.
Less e-waste and the rest of it.
So this battery thing is a good thing for Apple to lose money on it and have trouble partly because of that. So what?
Yeah,
so it's a good thing.
So you're saying if Apple becomes, say, IBM in a decade,
so what? So what?
It's still a massive money-making machine,
you
know, but at the same time, you know, as you say, people are replacing their batteries. And also, Tim Cook blamed China a little bit on this, and I was kind of skeptical, and then I talked to friends out there, and Apple is now becoming, in fact, buying any American technology in China is almost seen as disloyal in some circles.
Yeah. This is the new backlash.
Yeah.
Remember, in fact, this happened New Year's Eve, the Huawei PR team that tweeted New Year's greetings not from a Huawei phone but from an iPhone and got busted, and two employees got demoted because of it, because it's seen as disloyal.
Yeah,
it's not merely, you know, your company's mad at you. The Chinese people thought of it as disloyal.
And
right?
You were saying we're coming up to peak smartphone. Huawei released that letter, and they're saying no, we're expecting 30% increase in smartphone sales because they're not hyper expensive.
Well, partly what's eating Apple's lunch is the very inexpensive but very high quality Chinese
phones.
If
you're willing to pay half the cost and get 90% of the functionality, it's a no-brainer.
No one needs Face ID, really. No one needs emojis. No one needs...
I don't have any of those. I've never missed them once.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting old.
Do you miss them, Mike? You've switched to an Android.
And no, none of those things. And I'm so happy.
Never received an emoji text from you, actually.
Yeah, you're not going to.
I was talking to my mom, and I did turn on the emoji of my face. She says, stop it. What are you doing? Stop that.
Why are you a talking pile of feces?
Well, yeah, what?
Oh, wait, that's quite
normal,
actually.
She said, that looks like poop. She said, stop it.
So no, I mean it's
innovation.
Courage.
What they've added is courage. The courage in making you buy dongles that you immediately lose, and it's gimmicks like Face ID.
So there is, especially among people like you, a certain amount of joy in this announcement that Apple's not going to be
joy.
Quite as,
joy is it's just like
Schadenfreude's the right
a sort
word.
Finally, they're getting the message.
Finally. You know?
I mean, this is probably an unpopular opinion, but I think that all of the success of Apple is due to one person, Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just coasting after the post-Steve Jobs era.
I think there's evidence. It
was
so good.
Was Steve Jobs's, other than the building, which is also amazing, the circular spaceship building. The iPhone, maybe arguably the iPad, but the iPhone was his last genius move to go into a whole. I was critical of it back in 2000, whatever.
Seven.
It was brilliant.
Well, before that, I was critical and said, oh, come on. I did the same thing.
The worst business. So you don't want to, I said the same thing. You don't want to get in that business.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's
a disaster. What a catastrophe.
And to be fair, the first iPhone was a real dog apart from the user interface.
But the vision of it all and the execution of it all over time was just
absolutely
killer.
Perfection.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the Schadenfreude thing, though. I don't think people are
that
really...
is a German word, for those who don't know, that means the shameful joy at the misfortune of others.
Except for the shame part. the thing about that is I don't take any joy at a company doing poorly. I don't particularly care if Microsoft is better than Apple. What I do want to point out, though, and cop to, is that Apple fanboys being sad is fine by me. That probably brings me a little bit of joy.
Uh-huh.
Because they've been banging this drum forever about how Apple's better than everyone else, even though it's not. It's great, but other companies are good too. And to see this happen is a bit of like, you see, they're immortal over a one Apple way or whatever. Because there's just people at a corporation. So the fanboys drive me nuts. Apple, I don't particularly care about. I'll use whatever PC is best. Currently, it's a Windows 10 gaming rig and this MacBook Pro. That's all I need.
Yeah.
But I don't care more than that. Just the people drive me nuts.
What's the German word for shameless? Joy.
The shameless joy. I just looked up Schadenfreude. There is an English word that means the same thing, which is unusual because a lot of German words, there's no translation. It's epicaracy.
That's not quite as fun.
Epicaracy.
To say.
I've never heard it.
Caracacy.
It comes from the Greek epi, upon, kara, joy, and kakon, evil.
I don't see that catching on. I think we're going to stick with the German on this one.
I don't even want to make that the title of the Twit episode because no one will remember it.
Epicaracy.
Yeah.
You see, one of my favorite German words is Backflenchinch, which is used to describe a face that should be slapped. Which is, every time I see
I've got one of those.
Yeah, I mean, every time I see Hugh Thompson at the RSA conference, it's just like, yeah, that's a face made for punching.
Yes.
It's just...
I think you mispronounced it, but I don't
know.
It's got a lot of syllables.
I mean, they were first in the queue when it came to the syllables for that word.
So...
look, they're fine.
We're in an interesting situation right now, though, I think in technology, where it looks like, and maybe this is always the case, because, you know, just as fish aren't aware of the water, we're not aware of our, you know, limited scope. It looks like companies like Google and Facebook have gotten to the point where they can't fail. They can't wear out. They can't, there's no business cycle applicable to them.
I don't know. I think they're, in both of those cases, you're looking at firm. They're not
History would tell you that.
They're not going to fail. They're into the gradual decline. You know, this is sort of into the nursing home.
There's not
going to
be another Google coming along, another search engine coming along. There's not going to be another Facebook coming. Just as Facebook destroyed MySpace, nobody's going to come along and destroy Facebook. Or is
I'm trying, personally.
I disagree.
I don't know. You probably don't know this because you're not on Facebook. But but I'm doing this. I'm quitting Facebook slowly. So in July, I'm quitting.
That's called not quitting,
yeah.
I might add.
No, I did that with drinking for ages.
Yeah, right. I'm still working on it. No, but it's like Walt Mossberg, 4 days after I wrote this big post about why I'm doing it, said, I don't want to convince anybody else.
He quit, didn't he?
He did. Mm. But I want to convince everyone to get off Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, and Messenger because they're just...
I've already done
horrible.
That.
I know you've done it.
I tried to... So I bought the Facebook portal devices.
You were the one.
I was the one. No, because I had to. I thought, well, it's good to review it anyway.
They're not talking about unit sales either.
If they weren't tied to Facebook, I think they'd be pretty remarkable.
Yes.
Mm. The problem is I can't get my money back. I've written to them. They said 30-day money back. That 30 days has passed. I wrote to them. They said, okay, fine. Why do you want to get rid of it? said, because I don't like you or something. And I sent them the invoice, said, we need to see your order. I sent them, and then I never heard from them again. And now I realize it's because I don't have a Facebook account. I'm caught in some weird.
That is not, they have a shadow profile on you that's a mile long.
I know. They know who I am.
They know where you are right now.
Yeah. So why can't I get my money back?
Because they don't want to.
No.
We sold a pair of them, we're not giving your money back.
It's a lot more profitable just to put you through.
Anybody wants a Facebook? It's no good to me because I don't have a Facebook.
Suddenly they have no data on you.
But you see,
you're the only person that I have data on.
I think Facebook.
Yeah, all of a sudden they can't find you. Yeah. Leo, I don't know.
We don't know who this guy is.
Who are you? You're not on Facebook.
Can I touch on why Google could struggle, if not fail, but struggle? And one thing that people don't keep tabs on is every quarter Google reports earnings, and they show off two numbers that are very important. One is the number of paid clicks they've had, always goes up. And they also show the cost per click for those paid clicks, which goes down because they're driving more mobile clicks from search over time, which is good for them, but they're worth less per click. And so eventually there will come a day in which the price per click goes down.
They actually pay you if you click something.
Maybe. That's Taboola, I think. That's how that works. But there's a time in which these curves no longer work in Google's favor and doesn't actually generate revenue growth. At that point in time, they'll be where Apple is now, still hugely profitable, still doing very well, but not the same engine that they were before. And that's going to change the corporate culture, how they push product development.
So I have a very simplistic point of view, which is, well, nobody can duplicate their search engine. But you're making a very accurate point that that's not their revenue source. The revenue source is
paid clicks.
Paid clicks. Yeah. And of course, I think Google realizes it because there's a frenzied search for the next big thing at Google. I mean, that's clearly a big deal for them.
Nest, Verily, the cloud thingy, the drones,
Waymo,
and whatever.
The whole alphabet structure.
Right.
Yeah. But you see, I think Facebook's problem is that it won't get overtaken immediately, but it's being cut off from both the bottom and the top. Younger people aren't going to Facebook. They're actively deleting. They're deleting their accounts, and they're going to Instagram, which Facebook happens to own. But that's not going to work anymore because Facebook isn't going to be allowed to buy up the competition in the same way that it used to.
They're not.
No.
Who's going to stop them?
The regulators. Facebook has pissed off so many people in Congress at the moment.
That's true.
That they are. I think they're going to face a very tough time.
Facebook buys be pissed off until Facebook starts writing checks.
Yeah, I'm
not sure that there is that. But also at the upper end of the scale, and this is something I noticed because my parents are on Facebook, and my parents were on Facebook.
Well, you use it to keep in touch with people in the UK.
Yeah, which I do, but I'm seeing a lot of the older generation with the privacy stuff that's been coming out now. I kind of like, you know what? I was fine with just email, and they're downgrading their accounts. The app in particular, my mum took the app off her phone, and a bunch of her friends did because they were worried that it was listening to them. And
so
I told them it didn't happen. But
no, actually, it may not have been listening to them, but we're now seeing a number of stories that even
Data correlation, but the idea that there'll be
these
could
shadow profiles
surreptitiously
are very
be
real.
Listened on.
Data correlation is not something I want to have happen on my phone without my permission, I feel. But I agree with this entirely.
That's interesting that they're that aware.
Mm.
Is that because of you?
They do read my copy, yes. So I don't know if every 80-year-old is doing it. But they said themselves they've had a massive number of people deleting the app.
Yeah.
And that's really going to hurt them long term.
And I have an alternative, but why don't you go first and then...
Oh, I was just going to say my mom is the most active Facebook user in my family, and she's the least tech savvy. So,
that's
not the demographic you want if you want a cool product that will persist long term.
Well, but if what you want is to sell... advertising, there is a case to be made for a less tech-savvy audience. I was told at Tech TV that we don't want tech-savvy people because they don't buy brands. They search for the best product at the best price. We don't want that.
No.
Give me an impulse idea. Give me an impulse buyer who doesn't know what they're doing.
Honestly, I don't know about Facebook, but Instagram, one of the reasons I got off is because I made so many impulse buys on Instagram.
Yeah.
Buy stuff.
I bought Instagram. Underwear, bought Instagram. Everything.
Their advertising is amazing. It's so
really
accurate.
Works.
They know exactly what I want. It's like...
So honestly...
You see, I make a point if I see an advert on Facebook, I deliberately don't buy via Facebook.
Yeah.
It's just like me being bloody minded.
That's why they don't like people like you.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem.
Well, there is I don't know if there's a term for it, but there is a thing called banner blindness. I was just reading about this, where people just don't see banner ads. I know I don't see banner ads. And I think that is almost like you, a willful desire, which is a shame because I am in an ad-supported business.
Well,
but
as
a willful desire
as
not to see advertisers, right?
But yeah, I mean, it's. I think there is a kickback against it, and particularly when people get more and more creeped out by, as you say, the shadow profiles and the amount of targeting that goes on. I think that generally does creep a lot of people out, and it will come round and hurt them in the end.
Yeah. What I'm fascinated by is the fact that people think that it's impossible to replicate Facebook's reach, which it is not, actually. Mm. I've created this idea called the Nice Book, which is a Google, it's simply a shared folder.
Is it
Google
on
Photos,
Google Plus?
Google Photos.
Okay.
Close. Closest thing that still exists.
I have to say,
Mike, if you don't know, is a huge Google Plus supporter.
When they kill Google Plus, I didn't think of you, and it was just
first
like,
person I
Mike
thought,
is going to be punching a wall right
now.
He's
going to be like these Apple people when they find out that Tim Cook's letter.
So
to
you
the,
use Google Photos as a social
so
network?
I have a single folder called Mike Elgin's Nice Book.
Oh, I've seen stuff coming through my phone.
See, everybody gets it. Everybody gets it.
I don't get it.
All right,
Wait a minute, that is so weird. I was wondering what those notifications
were.
Yeah,
it's irritating, isn't it?
I get comments because I'm somehow in your Nice Book.
Yes.
I get those comments on my phone.
Right. So I've invited everybody on Facebook to join me. I post pictures of, you know, my personal life, my you know, squishy face, all this stuff. And then until July, I'm going to be posting those on Facebook so that people can click through to my Nice Book.
Mm-hmm. Mike Elgin's Nice Book.
There it is.
How did it get there? Oh, you shared them with me.
I shared it.
I didn't even have to say yes.
That's right. That's the best
you're
part.
You're pushing content.
But if anybody who wants to join it can join it. It's like completely open to the public.
But why join it? I'm getting it anyway.
Well, you got the deluxe edition.
Exactly.
Oh.
So it's all the good things about Facebook. You share photos and comments and things like people can like it and all that stuff without any of the disinformation, the fake news, the Russian probably whatever, the manipulation, the lying, the ads, none of that stuff.
It's the best part of Instagram.
Yeah,
and there's comments.
It can be, the notifications can go through the app and also through email, which means it has three times the reach of Facebook. Three times as many people can see my Nice Book as can see Facebook.
So if I set this up, I would have to add people by their email. I just read an article about this being a problem that you don't have to say yes.
It's a harassment problem.
Yeah, right. They can share. You know, I get already a ridiculous amount of harassment on Google's Hangouts.
Yeah,
it's very easy for people. I get so-called women. I'm sure never women. You know, saying "Hey, baby," but it's always in French because my name's Laporte, so it's easy to ignore. But and that they even try to call. I mean, I even get calls.
Yes. Oh, sure.
This is a problem.
But with this concept, you can block anybody, and it's easy to do. But you don't have to invite anybody necessarily. You can just put it'll give you a link. You say, "Here, everybody, here's the link," and they can just join. They want to. They can set their own notifications. Mm-hmm. The difficulty of interacting is it's actually easier than Facebook. The quality of the photos is like 10 times better than Facebook. Everything about it is better than Facebook. So I'm just going to see if this works.
I like that because what I've wanted since I deactivated Instagram is just my public Instagram page without the social element. And everyone goes, that's a blog, dude.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, but I don't want to set a blog up. I want you to do it for me. I just want to upload photos to it. Maybe this is going to be my middle ground. I kind of like the idea.
It's so easy and fun.
Do you think there's much scope for a paid social network? Because we were arguing about this in the pub before Christmas. And it's like, I don't honestly think people are willing to pay for a social network.
I don't like it at all because there are people have different levels of ability to pay. And so you're creating this elite thing. And
I've always supported
remember
that.
Remember app.net?
Paywalls bother me, So, by the way, Mike, just as a little tip, you could also make a blog this way. Google Drive's sharing system also has the same permissions problem. Somebody can share with you. You don't have to accept it. And if you only have view permissions, you can't remove yourself from the share. Right. This is from an article in How To Geek.
They said they would fix it, though, and we'll see if they do. But, yeah, that's a really weird problem. There's actual – I read that, and I'm like, there's spam in Google Drive?
There will always be spam. Where there is a display, there shall be
spam. Spam is like water. It can't the same thing could happen. Now, I have to point out, they've got to fix it in photos, too. Because let's say you were an abusive spouse and you wanted to use this to harass somebody. You could do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, on the other hand, I like being part of Mike's Nice Book, but –
I like the name of it.
Yeah. it's everything that Facebook has, but only the nice parts.
Yeah.
It's hysterical. And there's all these comments.
Yeah.
What was weird is I was getting notifications for the comments.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know why.
Yeah, I immediately went and did a how-to about how to adjust your notifications because I was kind of, speaking of spam, like
yeah,
you say.
Yeah, you're going to get some notes from people.
Why am I getting Happy New Year, Mike and Amira, in my notifications?
Don't you want to know that someone else wishes him Happy New Year?
Exactly. It's just like Twitter when they say, oh, this other person liked somebody else's thing. I'm like, I don't care.
That's the funny bit about all this. I've been talking a lot of smack on Twitter about how I'm off of Instagram now, deleted my Facebook account. And I'm like, what I'm telling you on Twitter, which I am horribly addicted to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
just plug that into my veins.
If you're a journalist, I mean, there's no escaping.
Yeah.
I think it's hard to ignore, though, the
Twitter
abuse
is the one
that
I can't give
on
up.
Twitter. You
know? Yeah, it is.
I mean, Twitter, you could make the argument, oh, the Arab Spring, they keep bringing that up. And,
yeah.
But I can bring up so many more cases where people have killed themselves over bullying on Twitter.
Yep.
The abuse that happens, the abuse I get and others get. I mean, I was happy. I have never been happier leaving a network than Twitter.
Yeah.
It was a little harder to leave Instagram and Facebook, but Twitter, that was easy.
Yeah, you see, I've never had an Instagram account. I couldn't see the point of it. If
pictures are how annoying.
I don't take that many
pictures,
but
pictures are nice. But then I started feeling bad because everybody's life looked better than mine.
Exactly. Everybody feels that way, and it's just an inevitable part of human nature. But another part of human nature that's driving some of this is, and we're all guilty. Everybody at this table is guilty of this. We have a bias for the new.
Mm-hmm.
And old stuff is like, because I tell, what's the solution? Well, it's RSS.
Yeah.
It's email newsletters. It's all this old stuff.
And works great.
Nobody wants to talk about it, but that's the solution, actually.
Well, try finding a decent RSS reader now that's basically Feedly and that's it.
We've
had to write our own.
Right. I have a Pixel.
Really?
I have a Pixel book, and I just have an extension that turns, just becomes an RSS reader.
What's the last bastion of RSS? Podcasting.
Yeah. Oh, good point.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how people know we have a new show is RSS.
Right.
Well, ironically,
they don't know it, but they're subscribing to an RSS.
Look how great it works.
Yeah, I mean, it's very effective. It's worked for 12 years.
Yeah. I think email newsletters are coming back because Axios, the newish media company, has built their entire platform on short form articles sent out through newsletters. It's brilliant.
Yep. What? That's how Axios works now?
Yeah. So if you read through their website, it's kind of like the same chunks you can see inside of newsletters they'll send out to you in the mornings or the afternoons. And so it's kind of a
brilliant
setup.
Morning newsletter. I used to get that from Axios. It was quite
good.
What's his name? Mike or
Dan Premack?
Dean Premack.
That was the VC newsletter.
Yeah. And then Mike Allen has a Wake Up to What Matters from Mike Allen every day.
Yeah. Axios is fun, but the newsletters are their gem, and they've been around since 85.
I've been saying for a long time also that the best social network by far is email, and so email newsletters is one avenue of that. People need to spend more time managing their filters and all that kind of stuff.
That's
and
the
email
problem.
Can be beautiful.
Yeah, I have one filter that says if there's unsubscribe in the body of this message, stick it over here.
That's
all of your newsletters are ending up in that folder, but at least they're all there. I was wondering
where they were going.
That's how he broke through the noise. He shared his photos.
I'm going to remove the unsubscribe.
GDPR violation.
I shouldn't say that. That's a great filter, by the way.
Yeah,
highly
recommend
it. Yep. It's a newsletter filter. But I think people always tell me, Jason Calacanis used to say, click through rate of newsletters, fantastic. His whole business is now newsletters.
You know what it
but
is
I
online?
Don't get it. I don't want to, maybe I get too many newsletters.
My click through rate is typically 58%.
You mean your open rate?
My open rate's 58%. The click rate is, it's astronomical.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's so good.
I mean, think about Facebook, your stuff ends up in the news feeds of about 5% of the people that
here's the problem. A lot of that, though, in this, I'm looking it out at my subscriptions folder, is advertising. Sur la table, it's Instant Pot, 60% off. American Thinker, Democrats.
That's pretty good.
See, this is why I can't read these.
Yeah,
because I will then buy an Instant Pot and forget that I bought one last year and the year before and the year before that.
Why are people so into their Instant Pot?
I don't know.
It's a pressure cooker.
They're amazing, though. But if we just took Leo's credit card,
another Instant Pot,
I think the internet would be safe again. That might be the only thing we need to do.
Well, I just don't look at it anymore. This is all the newsletters. The problem is the good stuff, like here's Jessica Lesson's information newsletter. Yes. I want to read, but that's buried
in with
all of
these. You're paying for it. You should read it.
I know, $400 a year. And I'm sure I'm getting Mike's list and Stacey Higginbotham's list.
Who's fantastic.
So who are these people that are reading these, because clearly most of my newsletters are junk, man.
It's people who don't get paid to be informed. Because if you don't get paid to be informed and you work at a job where you click buttons and put things in spreadsheets, you want a digest in the morning you can read on the commute or at the coffee spot to get caught up. And so us at this table, we get paid to know stuff, which is a great job, to be clear. But like that's why a newsletter roundup for me is ridiculous.
So I don't need it.
Look, I get the Times in print in Providence every day. 5 days a week. And so I read it, and often I'm like, oh, this is just last night's news.
I know. Every time I get the Sunday Times, RSS feed. I read all this.
This happened again? Oh, no.
But Liza loves it, because Liza has a job that's not centered around being on Twitter 24 hours a day. And so for her, it's fantastic.
This is why tech pundits should not be talking about tech.
So
we should talk about golf, something we don't know anything about.
That's the...
good walk ruined. Like but yeah, you
know. Anyways.
Let's take a break. Great panel here. Actually, it's so. I don't know why. How did we get out of the habit of? Oh, it's because half the time you're in Providence.
No, the last time I was on, you were on vacation, and Ian was hosting. So it's
really nice to see Alex Wilhelm. He is editor in chief of Crunchbase News, and obviously, if you want to know financial news, especially, that's a really great place to go. What is the URL?
News.crunchbase.com. Okay. Or crunchbase.news, however you want to do it.
I like .news.
Yeah, but it's kind of those weird custom TLDs that still seem a little cheap
to me. So I set up an email address, which is .email. Uh-huh. And Lisa won't use it. She says, what is that? You mean .com? I said, no, .email.
We are very classist about our TLDs, I feel.
Mm-hmm. I thought all email should be .email.
It depends, really. It's honestly, you're saying classes about TLDs, classes about emails as well. We were getting resumes in to hire a new journalist. One guy sent his resume. He was using a Hotmail account.
Oh, see, that's bad.
That's
bad. You know, it's not even Outlook.com. Just get rid of that. Yeah. AOL.com.
It's not quite AOL levels of bad, but it's still bad.
It's if I get an email from Leo at leo.email, I'm not going to open it. I'm going to be really? Like, that's spam.
Yeah, you'd think spam.
I would immediately think I'm going to get fished here and I'm going to be embarrassed.
So I set up my own mail server at home, this Helm thing, and I have a special email address. And you know what I love about it? I get no email. Mm. It's not even that I don't get spam. I get no email. Yeah. No newsletters. Nothing from you guys. It's great.
If only they could build a physical mailbox for the front of their house that never could accept mail.
No, but then people send crappy things to your physical mailbox and stuff it full.
Something has gone wrong in my brain because I have started learning Spencerian penmanship with a fountain pen. Mm-hmm. I'm getting off social networks. I got note cards that I send out for notes. I think I'm retreating to the Victorian
You're
era.
Wearing a sweater with buttons on air.
You should have a telegraph wire come to your house.
Next time you're going to have one of those sort of moustaches like that and a top hat.
I am a refugee from the 21st century.
Can I join you? That sounds amazing.
Think about it. Yeah. Not such a bad idea.
Yeah. Hey, Neal Stephenson was there with, if you've read Diamond Age, Neal Stephenson's book, where we regress to Neo-Victorians.
I want all the medical care, all the science.
Yeah, true. Victorian dentistry is
I want the dentistry. But I don't want any of this social media, super fast, always connected stuff.
Like The Village. Like M. Night, what's his name?
The Village. Shamalama Ding Dong.
That guy.
They moved out of the real world to an old 18th century world. Right. And they raised their kids that way.
Yeah, and when you need something, you send the blind girl out into the real world.
Send her out to get some medicine.
Yeah.
What is this thing? Is it a movie?
Fantastic. We just spoiled it for you, by the way.
Yeah. Now I'm not going
to
watch it.
No need to watch it now.
We should do this ad eventually.
All of Shamalama Ding Dong's movies have twist endings.
That's right.
So you really should never. It's always a spoiler to talk
about. After the break,
we
can spoil the rest of them.
If you'd like.
This will be a fun
There twist. Are dead people.
Yeah. Yes, I've seen that one.
Bruce right. Willis and all his
right,
career.
Our show today brought to you by, sorry about the spoilers, kids. But if you haven't seen The Village, forget everything I said and go see it. It is actually a great movie. Yeah. This today's show brought to you by Atlassian. Now, this is a part of the 21st century I'm liking. Staying competitive in a cloud-based world means your teams need to work together and execute faster. Your IT team does, and Atlassian empowers everything we do in IT. It's the company behind Jira, of course, and every developer knows Jira for agile development. But we also use Confluence. We use Bitbucket. We use Jira to keep track of punch lists, things that need to be done to communicate. Atlassian uses software to manage complex collaboration, and it does it so beautiful. It's the technology backbone that helps modern IT organizations plan, service, and support the kind of change that propels the business. And it doesn't have to be really an IT organization. We use Confluence for our engineering staff so that they can keep track of what's going on with the equipment, what's going on with the network. It's DevOps, it's agile development, it's IT apps and ops, ITSM, and whatever is next. An affordable, and this is important, affordable, reliable suite of tools. Jira Software, Confluence, and Bitbucket. Atlassian forms the backbone of effective cross-team project planning, organization, and communication. And don't forget Jira Ops and Ops Genie and Status Page, which helps you keep track of incidents, alert response teams, coordinate response efforts to resolve issues faster, and keep customers or stakeholders like me updated. Your team could choose tools that are right for your current framework while trusting that as you grow, they will grow with you. And of course, it all integrates right into Jira and Confluence, so you don't have to go from platform to platform. Everything you need is right there. We love Atlassian. And of course, you will too. And like all of Atlassian's products, the tools for your IT team are easy and easy to configure, easy to set up, and free to try. So go to Atlassian.com and find out what's right for you. Atlassian.com for IT. Unleash your IT team with Atlassian's collaboration software tools.
You know what I love about Atlassian?
What?
Their ticker symbol in the stock market is TEAM.
Oh, that's
cool. Which
is
like the best vanity license plate ever.
Oh, that's nice. You know tickers.
I do. I pulled it up to double check, actually, before I said that on the air to make sure that I wasn't wrong.
No, I like that. But you have to. Like, I know AAPL.
Yeah.
Right? Facebook is FBook, right?
FB.
FB.
Mm-hmm. FBook would be better.
That describes how we feel about it. But most companies have, like, Netflix, NFLX. They don't have, like, jokey.
No. AT&T had T. That was cool.
That was quite good.
That's like they were the first stock ever, probably.
Salesforce has CRM.
Oh, that's good.
It's quite good. Mm-hmm. It's witty. If you're into financial tech jokes, which is me and
I was going to say, that's a very limited audience.
You're the king. You're the king.
Oh, man.
Let's see. Have we done all the Apple stuff? The Apple Store, as Apple was quick to point out, this is, I guess, one of their services.
The very next day, that press release. And this is interesting. I got this press release about the Apple Store capping off a blockbuster Christmas weekend. And Google flagged it up as potentially spam and phishing.
That's terrible.
And so I got in contact because I get my Apple releases from Apple UK because Apple US hate us. And I contacted my contacts at Apple UK. And it's like, mate, seriously, you've just been identified as a phishing email by Google. It's like, I don't think we've been virus. It's like, no, I don't think you've been virus. I just think Google is playing silly, but, you know, they're getting too many false positives from something.
Oh, maybe, you know, that is true. They take signals from users. It could be a lot of users were saying spam. $1.2 billion spent during the holiday period and a new single day record on New Year's Day. It's always a good time for Apple because people get new devices for the holidays and then rush to the App Store. But that is a spectacular amount of money.
That's a lot of fart apps.
and flashlight apps.
Aren't they mostly free? $322 million on New Year's Day alone. $322. And remember, Apple gets a third of that.
Yeah. Well, just under.
A little under.
30%. Well, one thing every venture capitalist does on Christmas morning and New Year's Day is pull up the App Store rankings and see who's performing the best. Mm-hmm. You can see if Amazon apps are shooting at the top of the app stores. Right. You can presume high volume there, better platform for startups, etc. So it's kind of fun to see this from both the inside the app store perspective and also from the meta perspective, which is how much total volume went through. But I think the 30% cut will not last another year.
No,
Apple
they're going
will
have to change
to,
it.
Just the market forces alone are forcing them down. They don't own enough of the market to demand. Is that monopsony pricing or is that monopoly pricing?
Yeah, or duopoly if you're taking into them and Android.
On the other hand. Yeah. If you're an app developer, you're willing to give them, in many cases, willing to give them that 30% because you're on a platform that makes you money. Look at Fortnite, for crying out loud.
But Fortnite now has its own store.
Yeah, they didn't like it. But on the other hand, honestly, they would probably prefer to be on, as they are on Android, on the Apple Store without giving Apple a cut. But
right.
I think they're also pretty happy about the amount of money they've made.
True. But then all of a sudden you need to grow a little faster, hit the numbers, and that 30% seems a lot bigger than it did when you were just happy to have someone else distill your apps for you. When your brand
What is the pressure?
Enough,
how can they bring enough pressure to Apple to make them change
well,
that?
Well, I mean, one of the stories that I was reading up before the show is that Netflix is going to stop paying the Apple tax, and they drive hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue
that's a
through
huge
iOS.
One. $853 million in annual iOS revenue.
Right, so now they're going to take that away from Apple, and Apple doesn't get a 30% cut of that. If you're Apple and you need to grow your services income, as we touched on in the first segment, that's critical. That's your margin
but
right
in
there.
In that case, you could safely say that's rent-taking on Apple's part, because Apple, you know, it's one thing if you're delivering the app and people pay for the app, Apple's giving you some value. But if you already in Netflix app, you got the app, and you're giving, or Kindle Books, for instance, you're giving Apple a third of the subscription fee. That's rent taking on Apple's part. I think that's really wrong. Apple might have to give up on that. And haven't they reduced the amount of money they take for subscriptions?
Isn't there something like after a certain amount of money or time, they take less?
Yeah.
Which I think they had to, because once you get to a certain number of sales, you don't need Apple that much anymore. And you are just paying them a third, 30% for very little. I mean, you get to be in the App Store. Well, people want to buy this app anyway, as we saw with Fortnite.
Yeah, but, as a developer, you don't have to have anywhere to download. Apple provides a CDN. They have Akamai. They store it for you.
Yeah, but if you're a Netflix or a Fortnite or a big games developer,
you're doing that anyway.
You can do that anyway.
Yeah.
Riot Games doesn't need Apple to promote their stuff in the App Store to drive downloads. But that's probably 30 companies out of the 30,000 that are on the App Store.
That's the rub, yeah.
But they also, it's the power law, right? So they drive most of the revenue. So Apple doesn't really care if Billy Bob's Lemonade Factory App Store.tumblr leaves or not.
No, but they do care if $853 million flees from their pocket from Netflix. Mm. That's a huge amount of money, especially if you're banking on services to make up a shortfall in sales.
I know, they're saying that, what are they, $20 billion?
But the solution is not lowering the cut. Or would you rather have $400 million than nothing?
Being developer-friendly in the long term will lead to more income. It may lead to reduced growth in the short term, but if everyone that's the high-dollar customer, effectively, of the App Store on the app side, on the company side, leaves, what are you going to have left? Apple needs this desperately. They need to have good relations and long-term commitments.
Yeah, and they've been stiffing people for so long, that's going to take a little while to get back.
Remember when they charged more money for a DRM-free song? That's like the quintessential Apple
moment. Really, did they?
Yeah.
Like $1.29 for an iTunes Plus song.
Yeah.
Like,
I forgot about
that. Yeah, if you want to play us anywhere else, you have to pay us extra. Like, come on, y'all.
Yeah, I know.
Epic, creator of Fortnite, made $3 billion in profit in 2018. This is basically on a free-to-play game. That's what cracks me up. Yeah. That's $3 billion in dance moves and costumes.
Yeah, incredible. That's
it's
like
also a
what
game that I've never gotten close to winning once.
No.
Never gotten close to playing once.
Oh, it's fun.
You would enjoy
it. Everybody says that, I know. who has time? I don't know.
I'm not in Mexico City on a floating picnic table with tequila.
I'm busy doing that.
I'll trade you for a week. You have my life, play Fortnite. I'll go on the tequila boat or whatever the hell it's called.
You know that you're going to be playing Fortnite from the tequila boat.
I would. It'd be so much fun. I went to bragging all the 14-year-olds who were killing me. Like, well, yeah, you beat me, but I'm in Mexico City, so.
There was a wonderful meme on Reddit. There's a wonderful subreddit on Reddit called Watching People Die Inside, and it's this adult with a 14-year-old explaining Fortnite to him for an hour at Christmas, and he's just like, okay, just kill me now, you know?
According to Sensor Tower, Pokemon Go made $795 million in 2018.
Huge game.
Also, not a free-to-play game. I mean, also, all of that is just, balls.
And eggs.
And stuff. Balls and eggs.
That didn't actually help the sentence now that I think about it.
I was
trying to smooth that
out.
You're
not really selling me on Pokemon Go.
Okay, balls, eggs, and stardust.
Ah,
no, see, it's getting worse.
What
it's
are
not
you going
long walks in the park.
It does sound awfully romantic.
But, I mean, this phenomenon is not new. Riot Games and League of Legends for the last 10 years has been driving enormous free-to-play revenue and kind of showing the way through microtransactions and whatnot. So this is a long time coming.
A couple of weeks ago, we had the 25th anniversary of Doom, which was basically how this started.
Freemium game.
Yeah, basically they gave you the first, six levels free, and then Doom, you bought Doom.
Yeah.
Yeah. First proper first-person shooter, what? Got it right.
What did you think he said?
Dune.
Oh, Dune.
Which was a RTS game based off the novels. Make sure I knew. I've played both. I want to know which one we're talking about.
Oh, God, Dune, the game. Okay.
It's not very good.
Yeah,
not
well, very Dune, good, the film wasn't very good. I was shocked. I found out my wife had a crush on Sting. when she was a teenager and had a picture of him in that Dune outfit on her wall. Nearly called the lawyers. That was just...
So I'm really sorry about this tangent. Doom, though, had a thing you're talking about.
Doom was the original shareware game which made it work. ID Software
made the very first one, I remember.
Millions out of that by giving the game away.
But they had done some stuff like that. They had Duke Nukem and Commander Keen. They'd done
Wolfenstein before Doom, which
there were
a few other kind of free play. They basically ripped off an awful lot of stuff from another games company, made Wolfenstein, then made Doom, which really worked, and gave it away. And then Quake just dominated everything for a while.
I have to say that's the first time I've heard the word shareware since 2001.
I know, I'm dating myself, aren't I? Yeah. It's... I mean, do you remember how it used to be? I mean, I would get a cassette of software with, this is free, but if you want updates, send a fiver to this address, and you just put a piece of a note, the text file of the whatever.
Yeah. I mean,
and then you put it into a cassette player and fiddle around with the tone control, and you finally got it to load.
So wait. So I'm on more levels. I mail a fiver, which is a British slang for a £5 note.
Yeah.
I mail it to them, and then what comes back in the mail?
Updates to the game. New levels.
Another cassette.
They mail me more cassettes.
Yeah.
Sorry. I'm not quite in this generation, so I'm learning.
Just be happy you were born when you were.
Yes, yeah, I know.
You didn't miss a thing.
I grew up with dial-up, and I thought that was old school.
Have you ever seen an AOL CD?
Oh, I grew up on, okay. We used them as Frisbees. Yeah.
Coasters.
Yeah.
I'm convinced future archaeologists will find, they'll name it the AOL level of all these in landfill sites of just, layers upon layers of software, which once it gets onto your PC is as persistent as herpes and as difficult to get rid of. But yes,
I remember being members of the Punch Club Card of the Month. Club of the Month. You get a new punch card every month with a game on it.
No, you don't.
No, you don't.
That's a fib.
Oh, those were the days.
Because there were never enough personal punch card computers in the business.
Well, I had to buy a punch card reader for $38,000, but then...
And a house to put it in, too.
Pepperidge Farm.
And
remember.
An IBM. Yeah, those were the days.
That was a meme reference.
I remember. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Look at that. We're not over the hill yet, boys.
Qualcomm forces Apple to stop selling the iPhone 7 and 8 in Germany. Yeah. Qualcomm has set aside $1.5 billion. I guess this is a requirement.
Yeah, basically the court said to them, if you really want to go ahead with this case, we're going to need a bond on the potential damages. And Apple lawyers were reputedly just like, that's the end of that. And then Qualcomm said, there you go.
Here's your $1.5 billion.
In other news, Apple 10 sales are through the roof in Germany.
Well, you'd hope at least.
Yeah. Well, because the 7 and 8, is that a big deal? In fact, I think they've even started to remove them from the stores in the U.S. as well. However, Qualcomm is starting to make a little headway. On the other hand, Apple, it's a crazy battle. It's been going on for years. Didn't Apple have a court victory with Qualcomm?
This is one of the world when I turn to you guys and go, what happened in chips? Because I am very chip stupid.
I mean, it all comes down to modem and licensing revenues. And, both sides feel that they've been ripped off by the other side. And it's up to the courts to work out. Some of the lawyers will get fat. Someone will get about $400-500 million payout. And we'll go back to business as usual. But it's interesting to see that Qualcomm's market is how many people it's pissing off, and Apple getting into bed with Intel.
And Apple's going to be making its own radios. So.
They're going to stop putting those chips.
So it's a problem that's going to go away eventually in terms of the relationship.
Yeah.
But they're going to fight all the way through the divorce.
Right. Yes.
So the FTC, this is what I was trying to remember. The FTC is now suing Qualcomm because it basically underscores Apple's position, which is that Qualcomm has patents, but they're not licensing them as fair patents at a fair price.
Fair and reasonable price.
So the FTC agrees, and they are going to court. They'll be facing Judge Lucy Koh once again.
Oh, my gosh, the infamous, the notorious.
Yeah, she seems to get all of those
The notorious Koh. That sounds like a very bad rap band.
The notorious K-O-H, we call her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Anyway, so that's a moral victory for Apple, if not an actual victory. So this fight just is endless. But ultimately, that's what it comes down to, is that Qualcomm has all these patents. Particularly for outdated technologies like CDMA. All this will go away, I presume, with 5G, although I think they've been snapping up 5G patents as well.
And they are
charging a lot of money to Apple and others for the right to make phones that support these radios and these technologies, whether they use Qualcomm chips or not.
It's classic technology rent-seeking.
Back to that again.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
But companies like Qualcomm, component manufacturers, have all sort of, that's all moved to China long ago. And so they're sort of like, they're based in San Diego, I think.
Yeah.
And they're just fighting tooth and nail to stay alive in a world that really wants their business to go to either companies like Apple or to Asian manufacturers.
I was going to say, the Chinese manufacturers are now making all their own stuff as well. So
But they're winning in China. They won in China. They won it, just won in Germany. In many cases, I mean, they have the patents. They did invent these fundamental technologies. Yeah. The dispute now is whether they're asking a reasonable amount of money.
I was going to say, I mean, you can say, well, you invented the technology, but 30 years down the line, does that still give you the right to rip off?
Apple says no. Apple's refusing to pay.
I agree with this. It's one of my few anti-capitalist views. I think if you invent something, you should have it for even a quarter century. But at some point in time, let it go.
Yeah.
But isn't this Chinese chip push under there, China 2025?
Yes.
Overall,
basically, they want to be self-sufficient in technologies that they're not going to have to rely on. Because this is the problem ZTE had last year.
Oh, ZTE, you know, in America.
Sorry.
No, you're totally
ZTE.
Fine. I'm just translating
that
for
better,
you from Welsh.
ZTE. Yeah. Welsh. That's Welsh for ZTE.
It is pronounced Z.
I was just trying to be rude. He's from Derbyshire, apparently. Derbyshire.
Yep. So, they do want to be self-sufficient, and they will be. I mean, I was talking to an old Intel hand, and back when Intel started shifting production out there, they were just like, yeah, we know they're going to rip off our technology, but, you know, we'll keep the good stuff outside China and just use China for the volume stuff.
This all falls back to me into the kind of the bifurcation of the tech world into, like, closed systems and open systems at the country level. China has their own internet. They want their own chips. They want their own IP. They have their own internet giants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're kind of building a nation state of technology that we in the West increasingly don't want to interface with or can't due to security concerns. Yeah. And I don't think it's healthy long term. I think technology thrives on big open markets, and I don't think this is going to be to the long term credit of the Chinese economy. That's my macro view. I think it's too bad that we're moving backwards, it seems, in terms of openness and sharing across international borders.
I think China's taken the view that we've got 1.2 billion consumers, America's got 400 million. We're fine. You know, it's America that's in trouble over this one.
I mean, this is complicated. This is a difficult one. I have read several times, and I've talked to people who think that China's interests are hard to understand, because while they want total and ultimate control within the country, they are very much global, and globalism is very good for them economically. That's why the Belt and Road Initiative.
Yes, very much so.
And so they would like to be a world economic power and play and trade and have open trade, while they are very backward in terms of their own people. They're very authoritarian with their own people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, increasingly so, actually.
Yeah.
I mean,
I read a story. I'm sorry. This is just an aside to support that point. Now there are school children in some school districts in China that have smart uniforms that track the children, and they match the face recognition when they enter the schoolroom to make sure that the child who's supposed to be wearing that particular uniform is, in fact, wearing that uniform. So the tracking is actually tracking the child they think that they're tracking. And then are they in classroom or time? Are they late? Are they this? So it's like a totalitarian Orwellian system within the elementary school.
And it feeds into probably the social credit system that's kind of spreading around the nation.
And normally when you think of Orwell, you think of a country building walls, right, and going inward. Yeah. And that's what's so interesting about this, because they are not going inward in terms of their economy.
Well, exactly. But culturally, they kind of are, I mean, to a certain extent. I mean, there's some desire to have Chinese culture more broadly appreciated internationally. But most of their activity internationally is about getting resources to fuel this this enormous economy with all these enormous numbers of people, which is kind of necessary. Because, I mean, back in the day when Chinese people used to mostly ride bicycles and so on, it was like the resource demands were not that great. Now everybody wants the American dream in China.
Right. Which is why African push is going on.
Exactly.
And why
that's been going on for two decades now. Right. But one last thing before we take a break. But Leo, you said they want to go externally, economically. Not entirely true. They've been moving away from an export-based economy for some time and trying to build a domestic consumption-based economy.
Oh, interesting.
Which is why the last two quarters of slipping data on the consumption side of the Chinese economy has been so scary to people. Because tax revenue is down, and it's a huge mess. So I think I think this is not the China show, so I should shut up. But I think there's a lot here from the tech side that we need to pay attention to in the next couple of years, because this topic is not going
increasingly
away.
We are watching with interest to see China's going to leapfrog us in AI. Yep. China's, you know, because they're the government's
way ahead of
lots
us in
of
AI.
Money on this. There are a
way
lot
ahead
of technologies.
Yep. In terms of space, they've just landed it. Done the first
dark
ever
side of
on the far side of the moon. Please, not the dark side of the moon.
Wait a minute. You can't call it the dark side?
No, because it's not dark.
Oh, okay.
It's a Pink Floyd
it's
album.
Dark
not
to us. It's dark to us.
It's a great.
You don't see the other side, but there's a sun there, right?
But that's why it was called the dark side, like in Darkest Africa, where you didn't actually know what was there, but technically it's the far side. I've been arguing with readers about
also
this.
Also, a great cartoon,
all
The Far Side.
Week.
Fantastic.
Yes, fantastic cartoon.
But a great album, The Dark Side of the Moon. So.
Yeah. But it's interesting. They had an AI conference where just at the end of last year, where they were saying, yeah, well, America's filed more patents in AI than any other station. So, yeah, the fact that the Chinese aren't actually, has filed more papers, academic papers about AI. The fact that the Chinese haven't done as many doesn't mean they're not producing the amount of
publishing.
Stuff. They're just not publishing.
And it doesn't mean they're not memorizing all the papers that the U.S. has published.
Exactly.
And there's also, this feeds into another story that I don't know if it's on the rundown or not, but it's basically the Commerce Department is considering the limitation, it is on the rundown, the limitation of AI technology exports, not including a number of other things. And this is I personally think this is a dumb idea because basically the idea that China will just raise its hands and go, well, I guess we have no access to U.S. AI technology. I mean, the students are here. They're Chinese citizens who work for corporations in the U.S. I mean, if you look at in the sciences, a huge number of researchers in almost all fields, including computer science, are Chinese nationals who have come to this country recently. They have this policy in China called the 1,000 Grains of Rice, where if you return, you're academic and you work in AI, you will have a long meeting with some people, nice people from the government, who will start to work on you about what's going on, who's doing what. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they have a way of putting a lot of pressure on you and your family and all this kind of stuff. So they're going to get this either through exports, or they're going to get it through students, or they're going to get it through consumers, or they're going to get it the old-fashioned way, corporate espionage.
So there's no need to limit our exports of this stuff. It's self-defeating.
All it does is it gives U.S. AI companies a disadvantage in the global marketplace. Yeah. They'll be buying Chinese tech. And how does that help us?
It does provide a nice headline to a current anti-China administration we have running the executive branch.
Right.
But again, not a political show.
I would say with a caveat to what you were saying, like, yes, okay, there's espionage and yes, there's students. There's also a terrific amount of very well-funded, pure research being done in China. If you look at particularly in terms of quantum communications and those sort of areas, they are leaps and bounds ahead because they've invested the money in academics and they've done the pure research that's needed.
Yeah.
And something America is very bad at is funding this long-term pure research rather than going for sort of short-term commercially viable stuff.
So the Commerce Department is taking comments. They will make a decision on January 10th. This comes from a bill passed in August by Congress, the Export Controls Act of 2018, which allowed the government to restrict exports of emerging and foundational technologies.
Including voice.
Mm-hmm. And so you would think, I mean, oh, the Chinese are stealing it from us. They're cheating. We should keep them from this stuff. Mm. But in fact, academics are worried because, A, you can't control the export of this stuff. You can't control. And a law like this will actually hurt us more than it would hurt the Chinese because we won't get the information. Mm-hmm. The Chinese will anyway, and that means we will fall behind.
Is expecting rationality from the Commerce Department, which is a bit of a hard push at the moment.
But it's hard because, you know, on the face of it, the surface of it sounds like, well, yeah, we shouldn't be giving them our keys to the kingdom here. We should hold those close to the vest.
But that's based on a false notion. It's widely held in Washington, that false notion, which is that if we don't share technology, technology will stop. technology won't stop.
No.
All this stuff is inevitable. Yeah. It's perfectly inevitable that really advanced AI will go completely global over the next 10, 20, 30, 40
and
years.
And all that'll happen is we won't have access.
Either we're
to
involved
it.
In it or we're not. And so it's like, take your pick.
Yeah.
It's happening.
Open systems beat closed systems. And if
every
you take
time.
Part in the open system in the long term, it'll be to the benefit of our country.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And I didn't mention, though, that, Fortnite made Epic made $3 billion on Fortnite this year. Ninja, the esports champion, the number one esports guy who's the king of Fortnite players, says told CNN he made $10 million this year playing Fortnite.
I mean, he's got he's a celebrity, flat out.
So when your mom said, What are you going to do, play video games for a living?
I was going to say, I'm so peeved. This is exactly what my parents were telling me 20 years ago.
Actually.
If I was just a little way down the timeline, I could have
It's better than you think. There's a Far Side comic from decades ago that shows parents looking at a television ad, sorry, an ad in the paper where their child plays games, and it says, can you save the princess? $50,000 a year plus retirement. And so they were joking about how video games could become a... actual living, and then decades later on, Far Side was prescient as opposed to rude.
Right. Yeah. Not surprised. I think Gary Larson was a very. Is he alive still?
Oh yeah, he doesn't allow. He's in total retirement. He doesn't do public appearances. Doesn't really even want his face online at all.
Good for him.
Yeah, because basically he did it until he felt it stopped being funny, and then retired to spend more time with his money.
There it is. September 2nd, 2005. Yeah. The comic is from much earlier, I'm sure.
Yes, it is.
Nintendo expert needed. $50,000 salary plus bonus. Looking for good Mario Brothers player, $100,000. Can you save the princess? We need skilled men and women. $75,000.
Okay, look at the dopey kid. Who's the gamer?
Hopeful parents.
The stupid backwards hat.
Yeah.
But see, he's not saying this is going to happen.
No.
He's saying parents are wishing this would happen because my kid is so dopey.
Right. This was a joke about how gaming was stupid, and then it became true decades later.
It's interesting. I was looking to a piece last year where the U.S. Navy used to have these special controllers for their periscopes, which cost like $15,000 a piece, and they've just replaced them with Xbox controllers.
On the most modern ships, they've got Xbox
controllers. Exactly, and also because the generation of sailors using them grew up with these controllers.
They've got overdeveloped thumbs. They're really powerful.
The Army also has these tanks where there's a gun on a turret on top of the tank, and it's controlled all electronically.
Yeah.
And they just get the latest 18-year-old kid in there, like, okay, go ahead, just pretend like it's a video.
Do you know what Call of Duty is? Get up there.
If I were a conspiracy theorist, I would just be all over this one. This has been the plan for the last 30 years.
Leo, don't encourage them. what was the game called? The U.S. Army developed a first-person shooter.
There's also a bad TV series about that where the people from the future come and get this gamer because he's like the best, you know.
There's a film, The Last Starfighter. Starfighter?
Yeah, something like that.
And the movie Toys involves children playing games that are actually powering real tanks they don't know are real.
Don't tell us the story, but I think it's called Ender's Game.
That's a different movie, but is also a similar point.
Yeah. Our show today brought to you by my shiny, clean, sweet-smelling smile. Because I use Quip. Quip. I love Quip. My daughter the other day, I was so proud of her. This was about 5 months ago. Said, Dad, I think I need to brush my teeth more. I said, darling, you do. She said, I want to get an electric toothbrush. I said, darling, it's done. And I had a Quip subscription for her by the end of the day. Starting a healthy routine and sticking to it are two very different things. I know you'd like to brush better in 2019. Don't use that tired old toothbrush. Get yourself a Quip. Quip is a better electric toothbrush. I just got my Quip refill, by the way, yesterday. It had a new head because you have to replace that head every 3 months. Automatically, they send you the new head. It had a tube of toothpaste, and it had a battery in it because Quip is the only electric toothbrush that doesn't plug in. It's a great travel toothbrush. It uses a single battery, a AAA battery. You know, 90% of us do not brush right. Did you know that? I didn't know that. Let me ask you, Mr. Dental Health.
Sorry, really, you're going to ask the British about
guy.
Dental health. Yeah.
Did you know you should brush for a full 2 minutes?
I just keep the big book of British smiles in the corner, and that reminds me to.
Yeah, they have a little timer in the Quip. It pulses every 30 seconds, so you do 4 quadrants, 2 minutes, and then it stops. It's great. The cover, I love the multi-use cover because it could be a stand, but it also has stick-em on the back, so you can mount it to a mirror so you never forget to brush because it's right there in your mirror in the bathroom. It slides over your bristles when you want to travel. You put it head down, and it protects your Quip on the go. Plus, it declutters the sink and makes traveling easier. No wires, no clunky charger. It goes 3 months on a battery charge. Brush heads automatically come on the dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months, and that's just $5. Did you know, more statistics, 75% of us use old, worn-out bristles that aren't doing the job because we don't change our brush head. Who remembers, right?
Yeah, I keep my toothbrush for about a year. So.
I'm sitting there, Leo, you know, I travel. I'm like, you had me at batteries.
Batteries, right?
Literally half the time I travel, I forget the charger.
Yeah.
And then I'm using the electric toothbrush like a manual toothbrush.
It's terrible, by the way.
Doesn't vibrate.
I have a separate Quip that is goes in my DOP kit for travel. So I always have it ready. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association. They're backed by over 25,000 dental professionals, thousands of verified five-star reviews. Everybody who uses Quip loves it. Over a million happy, healthy mouths. Go to getquip.com/twit right now. Quip is also affordable. It's the most affordable electric toothbrush out there. It starts at $25. If you go to getquip.com/twit, you'll also get your first refill pack free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. GETQUIP, getquip.com/twit. Get your Quip toothbrush and get your first refill pack free. Brush better. I love my Quip. With Quip. And we actually have
Quips. And your
Quips.
Smile is dazzling, Leo. It really is.
We have Quips for, because we have a 16-year-old. He has sleepovers. And the kids, it's interesting. 16-year-olds never bring toothbrushes when they come to a sleepover.
Really?
Never. Never. So we say, no problem. We've got your Quip right here. We put their name on it. It's kind of funny. They do not like that, I admit, but too bad. Too bad. We have to brush our teeth when we go over the Laporte, so we don't like it. We don't like it.
It's a tough life. Yeah, it's a tough fewer cavities and less time wasting your parents' money than
Lisa
office.
Is, I don't want to say a tooth Nazi, but Lisa is a dental, she's a dental health.
You already said it, Leo.
Enthusiast.
Enthusiast.
Yes.
She's very serious about it.
Well, it's important.
And as a result, Michael has never had a cavity. Never.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's okay. You can't knock it.
No, it works.
God, the last time I went to the dentist, I was went to a new dentist, and she looked at me and I said, yeah, you've got British teeth.
Isn't that, though, that's no longer, that's a canard.
Actually, kids these days are wearing, I mean, they get decent dentists, and they are wearing braces, which means that a lot more British people have got even
that
teeth
That is a
now,
blight but. In the United States, though. There is no teenager now in the U.S., I never had braces, but it's just like automatic. Yeah. You get braces. I don't know why that is.
There's a huge class distinction back to that in teeth in America. Having teeth that are imperfect is considered to be a huge
that's a
social
good point.
Signal.
That's that shows
your parents will spend the car payment on your face. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's basically it. More
which
than
is really
payment.
Weird because at the same time, there seems to be no social stigma about grossly overweight people wearing spandex in public.
No, we like that.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
We're in dangerous ground, gentlemen.
Yeah, no kidding.
Careful. Tread lightly.
Yeah.
Careful. So anyways, in the world of technology, I hear that there's a phone coming out or something.
Amazon Echo shopping tripled.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tripled.
From a low number, though, right? Mm.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an Amazon three stack. Times nothing is not much.
Yeah.
The number of voice-activated orders placed on Amazon's Echo three times greater during the 2018 holiday season than last year. Echo was also called on hundreds of, this is, you know, soft stats from Amazon, hundreds of thousands of times to help folks find cocktail recipes. The number one, eggnog and Moscow mules.
Oh, good grief.
You know, first of all, eggnog's bad, but a Moscow mule is delicious. But it's
actually,
really
Moscow
easy
mules
to make.
Are good. Yeah.
How could you not know how to make a Moscow mule?
I was just going to slam Amazon again, because they always do this. As a journalist, it's so frustrating. They're like, oh, it tripled.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
From what to what? Yeah. From one to three? Like what they always try they always imply wild growth without ever telling you what it is.
Yeah.
And they will never tell.
Here's a number. A real number. In the US alone, Amazon shipped more than 1 billion products through Amazon Prime.
So they're a shipping company then. But yes, I mean
Well, we have one other number. 2 days ago, Amazon announced they sold over 100 million devices.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But that's not just their own Echoes. That's devices with Echo or Amazon voice services built
my
in.
My future father-in-law has a bunch of these, and they're moderately okay. Yeah. But to your point, though, you're totally correct. They almost never release a base. They'd only give you the in Kindle forever. The biggest Kindle you're ever up, 200%. Right. Mm-hmm. Was it 4 from 2?
Right.
Yeah.
And it drives me absolutely batty.
Does anybody buy Kindles anymore? Not the tablets, the e-book.
No, my wife's just bought one.
I think they do.
Really?
Yeah, because their old one died. It's just, if you're going away on holiday or if you're commuting, then they are really quite handy. Because I'm never anywhere without a book. I don't have a Kindle. I just put it on my phone. But she...
Well, that's why I wonder, because if you've got a tablet or a phone, you've got Kindle.
But with a smartphone, you've got to recharge it every day. Whereas if you've got a Kindle, which is, you know, using e-ink, then that thing can last for 2 weeks.
Remember, I'm not living in the 21st century, so you'll have to tell me.
In Victorian England, there are no plugs.
Do people not... Are e-books replacing paper books? Or are people just not reading books?
No. Tablets are replacing e-books slowly, and I think paper books are on the rise. So yeah. Paper books are also replacing Kindles and things like that.
Yeah.
See, so we thought, all of us in the late 20th century, that people would stop buying books by now. That paper would be dead. That people wouldn't. I mean, it's true, we don't see magazines and newspapers, but I think e-books are not as satisfying an experience.
They are not. I have three print books in my backpack, I think, right now. You know, like to me, I've never spent more money on print books than I do this last 12 months. I live on digital devices, but you know what they give me is a break from that.
Exactly.
And critically, I can't read on a tablet or a phone because I will get at least some notification that'll derail me. A print book is a gift to yourself.
It is.
Focus.
It's the second biggest gift to yourself you can have. The number one is print newspapers.
Squatty potty.
Right. Oh, print newspapers. Times? Yes. Oh, my God. Have you done that? It's like, it's the most amazing thing in the world.
I always do
read the squatty potty or print newspapers or
at
both.
The same time.
Yeah. And a cigarette. Together. It's peanut butter and jelly.
Coffee. Well, yeah, I mean, I posted a picture of myself online with the bookshelves behind me. And the amount of people are just like, you've never read all those books.
Yeah. Is that a screen? Is that a
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, and it's not that many. Yeah. But it's
it isn't
still,
that many.
It's
yeah.
just like
press wanker.
You can't see his if you're watching the
How
show,
do we
there's,
show
a,
that?
There's a picture
is
of
Is that on your
Ian.
Instagram?
It's on Facebook. So
oh, that's
yeah,
too bad.
I don't do it. Yeah.
He doesn't do paywalls or walled gardens.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's a picture of Ian wearing a very tight red top. No other word will suffice. In front of a collection
Are
of used
Are you playing
books.
Australian rules football now?
No, no. I was going to ShmooCon, the hacking conference, and I'd made a bet with one of the organizers because they said, obviously, you're press and you've got to make that known to people.
Yeah.
So always wear your badge. I said, I'll go one better. So I just wore a T-shirt saying press wanker, and that way everyone knew. Yeah.
It's perfect. Also your nickname all in one go. It's perfect.
Well, somebody did ask if it was a service, but no, it was...
Wanking is a service.
Family show.
But yeah, the...
Amazon said the number one toy in the holidays was the LOL Surprise. I don't know. Is that part of the name or is that the is that editorializing from Fortune? The LOL Surprise Glam Glitter Series doll with 7 surprises. No, I guess that's part of the name.
Fortune doesn't have a sense of humor, so it must be the actual name. Never
the second most popular toy, the Nerf N-Strike Elite Strong Arm Blaster.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Good fun.
It sounds like one was for girls and one was for boys, but I don't want to say
so
which.
So was the top waste one that unicorn thing that's been... Have you seen this? It's I saw it on
it might be. I don't think glitter is a good idea, but let's just take a look.
It's a unicorn that you feed with this...
What?
This is a ball.
Oh, okay. Now the number one in the UK.
Inside the ball. Wait a minute. Open the ball. Inside the ball, 7 surprises. Little dollies.
Huh.
They're all glittery.
How much money does this egg cost?
$8.
What?
And it's shipped to you for free.
Well, Prime.
No wonder this is the top prize. Yeah. That's a stocking stuffer's
dream.
Like
it's a Happy Meal without the French fries.
Yeah, but that's a downgrade. Yeah.
Well, also, but you don't allow Kinder Surprise eggs here, over with the little toy inside.
Yeah, why don't we allow that? Because it's a chokeable.
Apparently, it's a choking problem. You know, it's like.
But have a lot of Brits died
about
from that?
That thick. No, I've never heard of anyone. Okay. And even
maybe American children are not
bite
as prudent.
Down. That's how they get the teeth.
They have better teeth.
Can we talk about the fact that Amazon's doing the whole Whole Foods push? Because I'm really excited about that.
So Amazon bought Whole Foods, and they are now using them not only to deliver packages.
Mm.
I went into my Whole Foods the other day. There's a massive wall of lockers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can go there and get your package?
Yeah.
Or
why is
or
this necessary?
Food.
Don't people have door stops?
No, we live in apartments, Leo.
Oh. Yeah. Also, you've got porch pirates. So that's been a massive problem this Christmas. They reckon, sort of over something like ridiculous number, like 5 million people have had packages stolen off their front porches.
Did you call them porch pirates?
That's what they're called.
That's far too lovely. I want to be a porch pirate.
I'm a porch pirate.
Right.
How about stealing scumbags?
There you go. The alliteration makes it good. But stealing scumbags, or
they actually want to build more Whole Foods stores because they want every one of you to be within a short driving distance of a Whole Foods.
Yeah.
To give them
I
all
live
your
half
money.
A block from a Whole Foods and can tell you that what happens is you never have stuff in your fridge, and so you go to Whole Foods for stuff, and then you don't have any money.
You don't have any money in your pocket.
But it works, though. You're fed, but then you're also broke.
Yeah, it's like, I need a pint of milk. I'll go down to Whole Foods. Oh, what, a $50 bill, right?
You do yuppie food stamp.
I did. They finally got me to download the Amazon Prime app so that the Whole Foods app so I could get a Prime discount. And I don't know why, but I feel like now it's just going to watch me everywhere I go.
Oh, yeah, it is.
That's absolutely the whole point.
Yeah.
Because all it is a barcode. They could send me a picture.
But sure, I mean, they've had store cards in this country for, 30 years now? Like surely it's the same thing.
But I don't trust Amazon with my data, so I've actually stopped using the Prime app because I never got discounts, but I gave them my data for free. And I was like, this is a poor trade. If you send me a dollar each trip, I'll give you my shopping cart.
Right.
But otherwise, I'm not going to tell you. I don't want to give you that, Bezos.
I used to give Radio Shack my phone number when I bought batteries.
Battery Club.
Yeah. Wait, what?
The Battery Club.
Again, we have to break it to him what it used to happen.
Are you too young to remember the Battery Club? Battery of the Month Club.
When you used to buy stuff at Radio Shack, they would want your phone number and what else? Your
address. Your zip code, everything.
And you just gave it to him.
Oh, yeah.
Because back then it wasn't
why
not? Dangerous.
Why wouldn't you?
I mean, eventually you're like, you know what? I gave it to you like 20 times and I'm not going to do it.
You just give up.
Yeah.
You give up.
Okay.
But they did that.
I did buy stuff at Radio Shack. I'm not like that young, but I just didn't do Battery of the Month Club.
I think they stopped it at some point.
They must have. They stopped the whole company, too.
Yeah, they stopped that as well.
So if you buy a TV in the United Kingdom, you have to give them your name and address.
But that's different because they charge a license fee.
Yeah, so the licensing body can actually
That's fine, and that works out very well.
But I have the same problem at CVS. If there isn't a discount when I'm buying them stuff, I don't give them my phone number because I'm not particularly interested in letting them know that I bought shaving cream yesterday or razor blades the day before. You know, It's cost-benefit analysis.
Some of the stores they're building are actually bigger than the current Whole Foods stores, 45,000 square feet, and that's for Amazon delivery and pickup.
Well, Amazon sees the writing on the wall, which is that all stores, for the most part,
are going away.
No, they're becoming experiences.
Yeah.
So they're going to transform over the next 10 years, they're going to transform Whole Foods into like a whole experience. And I don't know what that means exactly, but it's going to be a lot more than just like go and buy some food.
Was this the vision when they bought Whole Foods?
That plus the thing that they're doing, which is using it as a physical location for all kinds of purposes.
Which is what we talked about. I think I was on Twitter when that happened, and we said they bought prime real estate near everyone's house that's already a prime customer, and that's critical to them.
Yep. Yeah. And the other part of it is that Whole Foods was popular, and I don't know, was it profitable? I don't know.
No, Whole Foods was actually struggling financially.
Amazon could clearly see why.
Is that not true?
It's they weren't growing as fast as they should, but they were among the more profitable.
Oh, they were profitable. I thought they were in trouble.
They were not growing. Was I think their problem.
Okay,
but
Amazon, as ruthless capitalists as they are, were able to easily see why, and so now you see Whole Foods is not quite as great if you're a super foodie or a health food person. Mm-hmm. They eliminate a lot of organic stuff. Yeah. They're sort of like they've kind of gone in the direction
they don't
want
to be an organic food store.
Amazon could realize we can make this so profitable if we just like make it less idealistic and more just ruthlessly businesslike.
Yes.
And that's what they're doing.
So that's not to say that the old Whole Foods didn't have its I mean, the asparagus water fiasco was just. You heard about this?
I don't want to know.
I did spend like $15 when I was 23 on like four tomatoes by accident.
Yeah.
Whole Foods chief executive John Mackey said in a recent video to employees he wants to address workers' concerns, improve communication, focus on career development in 2019. He says sales have grown since Amazon took over. At the beginning of the second year of this merger, Mackey said we're going to pivot back to team member growth and happiness.
The minute you hear the word pivot, you know something bad is going to happen.
Happy.
You know?
Well, Amazon, and I imagine Whole Foods too, is getting a lot of heat for its poor treatment of workers.
Yeah, and honestly, I've never seen a Whole Foods worker who really looked happy in their job.
No, they do seem glum.
Yeah. You know, it's... I mean, obviously, if you're standing at a till running through...
If you're
through,
taking
other
all my money,
through,
you should be happier.
Well, you know...
They should get a cut.
They're not getting the money.
That's true.
That suggests another benefit that Amazon, I'm sure, loved about Whole Foods. No unions.
Yeah.
An ununionized grocery.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And they actively fought against unions.
Mackey is very rabidly anti-union.
Yeah.
Well, that means I don't like him much. I would go somewhere else, but they're too close to my house.
But he put his money where his mouth is and paid his workers and gave benefits that were far superior to any other grocery union. So he basically was like,
if you buy off the union with piles of money to the workers, I'm cool with that.
Buy off the workers,
That's what I meant, sorry. Yeah.
So, according to a study, Amazon Whole Foods employees will not be able to. No, I'm sorry. You would have to pay the average Facebook user $1,000 a year to stop using it.
I think that's one of those studies where they kind of like.
They did an auction.
Got a
an auction.
I would like to see the methodology on that one because I was highly suspicious about that. It was just like, it's really, you know, it's like. Just throw a number out there, but if it actually came down to it, I think most people would cheerfully abandon Facebook for
$100
You know, $100 gift card.
Like a real $100. Like, here's some actual $100.
Right. And then, of course, they'd sign back in under another name. But, you know, it's just, yeah, I mean, Facebook is useful in some circumstances.
To ensure that respondents were telling the truth, the whole thing was real. Participants really did have to give up Facebook.
Oh.
And they really did get money.
Wow.
How did they monitor that, though?
How did they get involved in the next one?
You'd have to pay an average of $4.17 a day or $37 a week, and then they'll stop using Facebook. That's not much money.
$4 a day.
$4 a day.
I never got $4 for the dollars of joy out of that product.
Students needed to be paid more than adults.
Grande latte a day. I'll take it.
I like lattes, though.
Yeah. Oh, you see, if they paid me in lattes. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'll take the latte.
They pay me in coffee. That's different. I'd do that.
But I mean, so you're off. I'm off. You're going off.
I'm getting off.
And you're...
I'm on.
You're on. So one out of four of us grumpy people.
And this is mainly because I need to stay in contact with friends in the UK.
You're a press wanker. And you have to be...
Facebook for news is useless.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Twitter for news is actually pretty good, but Facebook for news is awful.
Well, you say useless, but it's the number one source of news. I mean, people actually do use it for news.
Well, yeah, news consumption, but if you're looking for breaking news and it's just a waste of time.
It is worthless.
The only reason I use Facebook is because I've got a bunch of friends back in the UK and I like to know what they're up to. With American friends, we generally just talk, you know. I know it's old fashioned to pick up a phone and make a phone call these days, but you know, either that or an email.
That was the biggest reason, the biggest difficult thing about giving up Instagram, which is that I have friends all over the world who are on Instagram.
I did lose track of you and people like you.
Yep, exactly. But, you know, what's funny is I sort of keep track of you and your life through Lisa's accounts.
Yeah, that's cheating, isn't it?
And, yeah.
My wife posts all these pictures of me.
Right. it's probably best that you didn't see some of them.
I know. Yeah. I've heard.
Yeah. But you really do give up. I mean, they really do kind of own us, and they it's really painful to get off these networks.
The problem is I haven't replaced it with something that I could read. I should replace it with, like, is just letters to you, or you know, emails or something.
Telegrams.
Staying in touch.
We communicate less, and that's okay. Like I sat down. I didn't know. I had to ask you, Leo. How have you been?
Nice.
Yeah.
And you said nothing has changed, but like I still had to take the moment to think about it.
Face to face is good.
Yeah.
But it's not practical in this modern world, or is it?
We're supposed to have friends around the world. Back in the day, you knew Bill down the street.
Yeah. You need it's nice to have notifications
when
somebody has something to say or something to show. And this is why I like the Nicebook concept, the Google Photos shared folders. You get the notifications, you see the pictures, you see the comments, you get to like them, you get to interact with
people. As you said, Mike, it's a false image because no one puts the bad stuff on Facebook unless they're one of those psychotic people. But generally, it's just like sort of, isn't life great? Isn't life wonderful? And there are studies showing that this does depress
people. It's a public
people.
Performance. And this is
the problem.
This is what I like about, you know, Google Photos is more homey. It's more, there's no performance. It's like,
you know, we need to go back to Chautauqua.
Yeah, let's do that. I heard you talking about that.
Okay, now this is brilliant. Chautauqua?
This is back to the village.
The village. This was a huge movement in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Okay. Teddy Roosevelt said, Chautauqua is the most American thing in America.
Where we get the word talk. No, it is.
No, it's an Indian word, but the idea was it was an assembly of people. They brought entertainment and culture for the whole community together with speakers, teachers, musicians, entertainers, preachers, specialists. They'd gather together, often in a tent, sometimes in buildings, Chautauqua buildings. There's still Chautauqua Institutes all over the country. And you know what killed it? Radio in the 20s. And I think we're in a similar situation here. That's an example of technology killing off something that did solve a human problem. Like, how do we formalize socializing?
I don't know if anybody remembers this, but in the 90s, there was like a movement where people used to have what they called salons.
Mm-hmm.
And there would be like a bunch of smarty pants,
remember,
like
the Bay Area.
Yeah.
It would get together and they have these conversations.
They live on as book groups, I think.
Yeah. Which always evolve into wine clubs.
Book clubs seem to be basically drinking sessions with books
involved.
Exactly.
Isn't that funny? That's been my experience as well.
And don't get me wrong, this is no bad thing. Right. But, you know, there's the salon movement, which was basically copying the 1890s, 1880s sort of salon movement, which really
came. But I think you're onto something, Leo.
Highfalutin.
Yeah.
The thing about a Chautauqua is a little bit
more. For everybody.
Yeah. Folksy, yes.
I think you should launch a movement to bring back the Chautauqua, and you have this huge platform, this huge megaphone. Go for it. I'll come to your Chautauqua.
Chautauqua.
Well, the reason I mentioned it on the radio show is because I think, in a way, that's what a talk radio show,
yeah,
especially if it's around a topic.
Chautauqua
radio. Is really, that's what it is. It's kind of getting together and just kind of community and talking. Yeah. And I kind of like that. But I think we've lost that a little bit. I think the current social media doesn't have that same sensation of...
I think what you do with podcasting in the chat room is
as
close
as you can
get.
This is much more folksy.
Yeah, because with podcasting, like, radio is too commercialized and too desperate to make some money. Whereas with podcasting, you choose the topics you want to learn about.
Yeah.
And it is genuinely educational and entertaining.
Podcasts are almost a modern version of this because they are niche focused, but they're also community oriented, and they're available to everyone for free.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. And they're also relatively unregulated. I mean, we can get away with saying stuff here, which we couldn't get away with saying on broadcast television.
Oh, no, we'd all be in a lot of trouble right now. This was
John
NBC.
Will yell at you, though, if you say...
John is like the agit pie of...
Exactly.
Oh! That's a killing.
Fighting words! He just called you a cop,
Have
sir.
You seen his coffee
Your response.
John, we need to get you a giant Reese's coffee cup.
Is Ajit Pai the least popular person on Twitter?
I want to talk about him in a second. Awesome. We'll come back. Because, I mean, really, this is all going to be about CES. And I noticed that none of you are at CES right
Damn
now.
Damn right.
We're
it's
smart.
Starting
yeah.
up. But we'll talk about that in a second. First, a word from our sponsor, LastPass. From Time Hop to MyHeritage to MyFitnessPal. You know what they have in common? Maybe if I throw in Marriott, Equifax, now you know. These data breaches, last year's data breaches affected millions of people around the world. If you're a business and you are keeping track of data, whether it's your data or customers' data, you need LastPass Enterprise. It makes password sharing convenient for employees, but keeps corporate data secure. And you will have centralized admin oversight. We use LastPass Enterprise here. We have for years, ever since one of our engineers put his passwords on a public website because he couldn't remember them. he realized his mistake, but we then got LastPass Enterprise because, of course, you want to use LastPass. You want to use passwords you don't remember. You want to use long, randomly generated passwords. In fact, we use LastPass's password generator to create these crazy passwords. Who can remember those? Well, you don't have to. You just remember them in LastPass. In fact, I trust LastPass so much. It's encrypted only on device. So even the LastPass company cannot access your password vault. No one can but you. We require with our admin settings that you use two-factor. We have master password requirements too. That's all important. You actually get over 100 policies. You get security reports. You get shared folders. Shared folders are nice because, like, our ops team has its shared folder. The business office has its shared folder. So all the company assets they need access to are there. In many cases, they don't even get to see the password or know the password. It just logs them into, like, say, QuickBooks, our accounting program, automatically. So if we change the password, they don't have to know about it. And if they leave the company, they have no way to get into it, which is fantastic. Two-factor authentication. We support multi-factor. We require it. LastPass integrates with a variety of authentication providers to offer flexible multi-factor options. They also have an authenticator app that's awesome. Instead of a number, it sends you a push notification. Approve or deny. You press the approve button, you're in. And even if somebody got your passwords, without the two-factor authentication, they wouldn't be able to get your stuff. I just love it. If you use Active Directory in your company, Microsoft's Active Directory, you can log into LastPass with your AD credentials for a single sign-on experience. Because the data is encrypted and decrypted at the device level, because it's so secure, and we had Steve Gibson actually get together with the creator of LastPass, Joe Segres, look at the source code and vet it for us. And he said, thumbs up, he uses it now. Because it's so secure, I keep my passport in there. I keep my driver's license, social security numbers, everything in LastPass. Protect your business. They have an enterprise solution, but they also have LastPass Teams for teams a little smaller, 50 or fewer. LastPass Premium for your home users. And at home, we use LastPass Families for the whole family. That way, everybody, including the 16-year-old, gets LastPass. Actually, the ex-husband also gets LastPass. We're very friendly that way. And I think it's awesome because things like, when Lisa needs access to the Comcast account, it's shared with her automatically. So she gets access to it. I don't have to think about it. She has what she needs. I have what I need. I love it. You're going to love it. 43,000 businesses, leading tech brands like MailChimp and Fortune 500 companies and Twit use LastPass. It's the number one most preferred password manager. LastPass.com/Twit.
Find the best password solution for your team at lastpass.com/twit. If you're coming to RSA, by the way, come to the LastPass cocktail party at Bourbon and Branch. We went last year. It was so much fun. We're going to go again this year, and I'm bringing Jason and Megan as well, so you can come say hi.
Oh, I'm totally doing that. Hey, a couple of quick things about passwords. I just got published a well-researched piece about passwords and the myths around passwords.
Is this
it's on security intelligence. Okay. Time to Dispel These Dangerous Password Security Myths by Mike Elgin. one of the most interesting myths, I think, is that people think a long, complicated password is always really secure, but they're not. If you write your own, chances are it may not be all that secure, according to some research that's been done that's actually really interesting. If you let LastPass create the password, it's going to be secure.
Yes, because it's a completely random combination of upper and lowercase numbers and punctuation.
Right.
Your choice. And I also make them really long, like 40, 50, as long as the site will
allow. It doesn't matter if you're using
it. Doesn't matter. Right. So, Sam.
Another myth is that password managers, LastPass, the leading one, have solved the problem. But the only reason they haven't solved the problems of passwords is because not enough people use them.
People don't use them. Yeah.
And so that problem is still there because people are not using them. If you
86,
use them,
this is from your own article, 86% of Americans rely on memorization.
It's terrible. This is as crazy as giving your credit card to the waiter in
a restaurant.
But you
know what that tells me? If they rely on memorization, they're using
easy to crack passwords.
Yeah, easy passwords.
It's the name of your dog. Exactly.
But also, there was some research on this at DEF CON where they were saying about where you've got to put the uppercase, lowercase on the symbol. In about 40% of the cases, the symbol is always an exclamation point at the end.
Yes.
Because that's easy to remember.
And it's easy to guess.
And password crackers are smart to this. Right. And that's one of the assumptions they'll make when they're trying to brute force them.
Yeah. And there's a new kind of AI that's out there called GANs, which can easily crack any sort of new.
Oh, really? What is this?
Unless they're really good. So GANs is, let me see if I can explain this clearly. GANs is a type of technology.
It stands for Generative Adversarial Networks.
That's right. Yeah. You have two machine learning algorithms that go against each other. One is trying to create fake data, and the other one's testing that data, and they both make each other better and better and better and better and better, to the point where the one that can create fake data creates such great fake data that they can actually crack fingerprints.
Yeah. Really?
It'll actually generate fake fingerprints that are very likely to pass as real fingerprints, and then it just runs 100,000 fake fingerprints against it and cracks the fingerprint because one of them is going to get through. Because the fingerprint. Anyway, remember this acronym GANs.
This is a GANs painting.
Yeah,
this painting is created by GANs.
GANs is also the technology behind the deepfake videos.
Yes. Oh, really?
Yes. This is the AI technology that's really changing things.
And it's coming along a lot faster. And
generative
because
it's two artificial intelligence, two neural networks.
Exactly.
Working kind of adversarially.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And together they both get better and better and better and better to the point where the one that's creating fake data makes such great fake data that it's better than the real thing. The other thing I want to say about LastPass, because I'm a dedicated user, is I want to speak to my tribe, the lazy. because you just set it up with a fingerprint, and everything you have that has a password, you just touch the back of your phone and you're
in. Awesome.
Or the front of your phone if you're on iOS.
Exactly.
Yeah, Face ID works with it too. Yeah.
That's the best thing I've heard all day.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Great.
This
for the
is
lazy.
A good article.
I'm going to have to steal that line.
Security intelligence. Mike Elgin, it's time to dispel these dangerous password security myths. I'm going to quote you on the radio show.
Fantastic.
That's who, I mean, I think everybody who watches our show probably already uses LastPass and certainly knows if they don't.
They should.
That they should be using it. Or, there are other good, use a password manager, let's say that.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be an individual brand. I see you making a face. You use 1Password.
No, I just want to point out that the Eagles did get the touchdown.
Oh, you were looking at the football
game. 16-15. So people don't know, but this twit.
That was his LastPass right there.
This twit was scheduled in advance, and then my football team made it to the playoffs, and so I have had one corner of my eye on this game all.
You warned me that would happen. At some point, we'd be talking about something, and you'd make a face, but it wouldn't be about the topic.
Nope.
We have had the armored rugby game playing for quite
armored.
Some time.
The
rugby
reason why I didn't accidentally interrupt Mike for 2.5 minutes was because we were at this incredibly difficult scoring drive, and we just
the so 16-15. The Eagles are leading. Well, we don't want to say. Don't say because there are people at home who are watching this show.
Oh, true.
Oh, good point.
It's an exciting game. Enjoy yourself. That's all
it is. We don't know who's won because it's not over yet.
True.
But it's a
back and forth, seesaw battle of the titans.
Yeah.
Not incorrect. Totally true. Anyways, I will stop spoiling the game, but I will say my heart rate has gone down dramatically, and so I'm feeling at ease.
We don't know what the score was. He was wrong.
True.
Glad about your heart rate.
Thank you.
Yeah. What is your Apple Watch? Oh, you don't wear one.
Oh, I don't wear an Apple Watch. I'm not a
new. You remember last year at that amazing Super Bowl with the Phillies won. Mm-hmm. That people were getting Apple Watches saying, I think you're dying.
Yeah.
There's something going horribly wrong. You've been sitting here, but your heart rate just spiked.
It's a metaphor for love falling football.
Yes. I love falling technology like that. We did a group, I managed to convince my editors to let me do a group test on personal breathalyzers that link into your phone through an app. So convince the company to buy us some scotch, wine, and beer, and then we sat around in the office drinking.
Testing.
And blowing into these things. Yeah. And if you take a big shot of scotch, and blow direct immediately into the breathalyzer, I got it to say, you are in urgent need of medical care and must go to a hospital immediately. And it was
your blood is now actually entirely scotch.
Yeah.
Microsoft is doing something. Speaking of passwords and privacy, I think this is a really interesting thing. Mary Jo Foley broke the story a couple of days ago. Codenamed Bally, it's a way to give users control of the data collected about them. We were talking on Windows Weekly this week that, you know, Apple, if you go to CES, there is a big billboard that says what happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone. Apple's doubling down on privacy.
It's also not true, however. You know,
true or not, it's a good marketing.
Oh, it's a great marketing thing, but it's complete bollocks.
Other than a complete lie. Yes. Zach Whitaker, who's now at TechCrunch of all places, one of my favorite security journalists, did a thread about how that's a bollocks advertisement. And I wasn't aware of all the different ways in which it was actually kind of crappy. Oh,
that's interesting.
Yeah,
one of the problems is iCloud, which, of course, Apple has the keys to. And when you upload iCloud, and if you're in China, Apple and China have the keys too.
Yes.
Because all the iCloud servers are in China with access available to the Chinese government. But what else is wrong with that?
I would have to go back and read. Right. Shall I go read the thread for us?
Well, I'll talk about Bally. We were saying on Windows Weekly that that Microsoft would do well since they are. I mean, really, the competition, Amazon and Google, can never say your privacy is our number one priority. Apple can say that. Microsoft could say that. They should say that.
I don't know. Having spent a good long day trying to lock down a new Windows 10 system so it wasn't constantly
They're not
sharing.
Doing it right yet.
Yeah.
They need to give you, you know, one of the problems, and a lot of people complain about it in Windows 10, is that even if you turn off all of the telemetry, there's some still remains. Microsoft really needs a button that says, no, I don't want you to send anything back to Microsoft. And they need to, you know, publicize that. And that's an opportunity for them that Google and Amazon cannot duplicate.
This feeds into my longstanding theory. I don't know if I've ever shared this with you, Leo, but I think a lot of people at Microsoft listen to Windows Weekly.
That's true.
I think it's very influential.
No, it's absolutely true. Yeah. In fact, we have every year our Christmas episode has the chief marketing officer, Chris Cappicella, on. Yeah. But I do think, and it's not because of Twitter or me, it's because Mary Jo Foley and Paul Theriot are very, very influential in the Microsoft business.
And they're delightful.
And they're great.
And they know what they're talking about. Yeah.
So the Bally project, which Mary Jo Foley found a link to,
Microsoft,
nice job, is described as a new personal data bank which puts users in control of all the data collected about them. This is something a lot of people, including, was it Tim Berners-Lee, who's created a company to do this? Yeah. A lot of people looked at this idea of, you know, with all the privacy issues we're talking about, really it's a question of selling your data for something of value. And the only way that'll work is if you know what's data is being collected, you control it, and then you actually decide who to give that data to and what the value is going to be to you. If you can do that, I think then there can be a reasonable conversation. You know, if I know how much data Google's getting out of my Gmail account, and I know how much value I'm getting from using Gmail, then I can make a logical decision about whether it's worth it.
Or I can make a trade-off. No ads, no data transfer, and I'll pay you X dollars per month.
Well, it would be really nice to have that as well.
That would be, hopefully that's the future, if we can get that.
It will allow users to visualize, manage, control, and share, and monetize the data.
Yeah, I mean, there is a definite market for an operating system which doesn't constantly report back on you. Could it be that this is the year of Linux on the desktop?
You stole my joke! Oh,
Sam, sorry.
I was like, I have one.
But seriously, I mean, it's one of the things I hated about Windows 10. It was that so data grabby. You know, they will stick adverts pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, they've got to stop doing that.
It's it's not a bad operating system in itself, but it's the nagginess and the snoopingness about
it. It's an opportunity.
It's not a startup anymore. They've been around for a while, called Digi.me. You heard of them?
Yes.
Digi.me.
Yes, I briefly signed up and then I forgot all about it.
Exactly. They just didn't have the whatever it takes to go mainstream, but this was their idea as well. You collect all the stuff, and their vision was to get to the point where the user would be in control of all their data and could sell or give permission and all that stuff. And they just had the right idea.
How do you do that without the cooperation of Facebook, Google, companies that make so much money, all of their money basically, on selling your information?
Right.
What's their incentive to participate unless governments or society or us start saying, no, we're not going to do it.
So, and also for Facebook, with their shadow profiles, you, the user, don't have access to the information they know about you.
You've got a dossier.
And it includes information you never shared with them.
Yeah.
Mm. So
on Friday, we're going to do a triangulation with a woman named Shoshana Zuboff. She's a professor emerita at Harvard Business School and has written a new book called The Age of Surveillance Capitalism.
Ooh.
Yeah. A fight for a human future at the new frontier of power. So she's really done a lot of work on this idea. And we are in a world of surveillance capitalism. That's how these companies make money, is by surveilling us. I don't know if there's an answer, but we'll talk to Professor Zuboff about that.
Are you optimistic? An interesting one to listen to.
About this, Leo? About this
I gave
whole
up a long
thing
time
getting better.
But
I feel like there's movements now. We're all off Facebook. There's Bali coming. We're all talking about this. We didn't talk about this 5 years ago. We just said, Facebook's not going to stop because, they're Facebook.
Yeah.
Maybe there is change
maybe
in the
wind.
Maybe
there's a movement. Yeah.
I think people are gradually getting up to the point that, oh, right, okay, well, it's nice having the free service, but what's the cost to me and what's the cost-benefit analysis?
Right.
And people are actually thinking about it. Unfortunately, the reason they're thinking about it is because these companies have been so egregious in the way that they've used this data in the past. But yeah, it's hopeful, possibly.
I'm optimistic for the first time ever, I feel. I think us leaving the platforms is the real catalyst.
It's the beginning of a change.
Yeah, because they have to keep... I mean, I think I'm a relatively high-value user at Facebook in terms of like what I can spend, I guess.
The key is to weaken and water down their network effect. And this is the thing. So you have to be on Facebook because everybody's on Facebook. But what if everybody wasn't on Facebook? Then suddenly the appeal is kind of weakened significantly. So that's the idea. It's not to everybody leave Facebook. It's for if 20% of the Facebook users left, that would really weaken the value of the service.
I can see how that works out. Yeah. But I will say we'll find something else as a species on which to communicate in mass form. I don't think we're going to end up with just email. But.
Let me quote sci-fi author Bruce Sterling. I don't know if you're familiar with his yearly State of the World, which he usually does at South by Southwest. This year he did it on The Well.
Yeah.
Did you say The Well?
Yes.
It's still going.
You're kidding.
No, it's still going.
Why didn't anybody tell me?
I signed up. I thought, finally, a social network for my people.
Yeah.
It's not cheap.
You said you wanted to go back to the 19th century.
It is very 19th century. Here's a quote from his State of the World 2019. The world is gray. It's becalmed. It's not a fatal gloom, but it is a kind of learned helplessness, a malaise and bewilderment. It's very much the attitude of people who sign onto Facebook because they can't yet figure out any other way to live. They do that because they must conform to the apparent need, despite their vague ox-like awareness, they're being spied on, tricked, and defrauded. This is the resigned malaise that fits the post-Snowden internet and tech industry's consolidation. It's the funereal aftermath of Moore's Law. He's a great writer. It resembles a fat, sweaty guy on the couch snacking on poisoned cookies. That's how it is.
He is a really good writer when he's on full.
I think that's the same guy Trump said hacked the...
The emails. He feels like, and he travels quite a bit and talks to people quite a bit, there is this kind of gray malaise spreading throughout the world. I hope we're not getting to a pessimistic...
Sports ball people, if you're not watching and you're just listening,
it bounced off.
A ball went flying through the air, and then everybody got
bounced
really
off
excited.
Of something. Huh. And there is a general look of gloom among one of the sports.
I mean, cut this part out of the edit, but like,
don't say anything.
We're talking about malaise.
Yeah,
I'm not.
It's malaise.
So, anyway,
this is a tax for me not canceling.
Oh, it bounced off.
Okay. All right.
That's straight out of that Pepsi ad where they iced the kicker.
So anyways, tech.
Honestly, everyone being so excited about kicking a pig's bladder around a pitch.
We have four shows happening here.
Hooligans. We use
Leo's talking about substantive issues. You're talking about sports ball. I'm like, the well?
I signed up for a year at 150 smackers. It's not
really
cheap.
Wow. Wow.
But I and then I went in and I remembered, oh, this is why I left the well. I was on the well a lot in the 90s. Mm. It's not any better. It's just like Times New Roman. No,
it looks
it's worse.
Like
it's Courier. Mm. Looks like Notepad. Mm. You can't really tell what people are talking about. You see responses without seeing the main message for the threading's bizarre. Maybe I haven't figured it out quite yet. But it was the first time I ever saw the internet was on the well. You could drop out of the well interface into a command line, and I could use Gopher and Archie.
You can't do that anymore?
No, I don't think so. It's web-based now.
oh, well, forget it. I'm not joining.
Anyway, I think this is worth reading. You do have to go visit the well. If you search for Bruce Sterling and SOTW, State of the World, you can read it. He invited some other people. But he is a great writer. I hope he still does the South By thing, because it's worth going to that talk just to hear
him.
He's
about the only thing worth
going to at South By.
South By Southwest.
It's like a Chautauqua.
You're going to come because I think we're trying to figure out if we could do the Capital One House again. So you should come and you can be part of our panel. How about that?
There you go.
We'll do Twit from South By.
Sure.
That would be fun.
Leo, can I come?
Yes.
Right. I have said I haven't been to Austin yet, and I do hear that.
Austin's great.
I hear the food is amazing.
Oh, you don't get to diss Austin if you've not been.
No, I didn't. I was dissing Austin. I was just saying the kind of social media obsessed weirdos that turn up to South By.
Go for Bruce Sterling. Stay for the queso.
Okay. Do you like meat? Oh, you love Austin.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean
he eats blood sausage.
Yeah.
Per our prior conversation.
Let's
good point.
Let's take a little break. We had a great week this week on Twit, and we have a. I believe we've created a small movie so that you can see what you missed. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
Hello!
Happy New Year! Did you know? It's a new year.
Yes, it's a new year.
Brand new for 2019 with all new hosts. I'm Leo Laporte.
That's Jeff, how we find out, Stacey.
Jeff Jarvis.
Right now.
Actually, it's the old hosts.
Dude, I disappointed everybody.
No, everybody's happy.
Yeah, they're like... Oh, new host. How exciting. And then, just them.
It's just them again.
This Week in Google.
Wielding rocks and knives, Arizonans attack self-driving cars. This is these are the Waymo vehicles going around in Arizona. They're saying we're the beta subjects for this. I guess that's a real point of view, right? That's reasonable.
Lawmakers did decide this, so technology companies really need to wake up and realize that they can't just fall back on data. They have to start dealing with people in all of our horrifyingly messy glory.
Windows Weekly.
You two, as is your wont, have made lists for the new year.
Mm-hmm.
Predictions for Microsoft.
When we were at Ignite, and this guy says, I don't know even how this came up, but he says, you said that Google would never buy YouTube. I don't remember this, but man, they'll hold you beat to the fire.
As it happens, I'm holding in my hands your predictions from last year.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Well, look at the time.
Twit, wishing you a happy new year.
Yeah. And happy new year to you too. Jim Cutler, who has for years been our booth announcer. Jim did all the announcing for Tech TV, and he very kindly, because he's an expensive fella, I couldn't really afford him, continues to do our announcing for Twit, and we love Jim. Happy new year, Jim. And Dawn, his wife. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. This is a great year to take your business to the next level. The people you hire in your company are your company. That's what a company is. It's made of people. And the right hire can send your company to the moon. The wrong hire can make it crash just as surely. So kick off 2019 by planning out which roles your business needs to hire for. And then, doing it smart, start the new year off strong by going to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Unlike the other job sites, ZipRecruiter actually finds qualified candidates for you. They have very powerful matching technology, goes through the resumes they have on hand. It will identify the people who have the right skills, education, and experience for the job you're posting. And then it goes out and says, hey, there's a great job here. You should apply. It actually invites them to apply to your job. What it means, and we had this experience. We lost our bookkeeper about 6 months ago. And Lisa's kind of going, oh, now I got to do the books too. I said, no, Lisa, look, this was at breakfast. ZipRecruiter, we've been advertising with us for years. So she went to ZipRecruiter. She posted the job. Within an hour, the candidates start coming in thanks to this matching algorithm. And she's looking at you, oh, this one's good. Oh, this one's even better. By lunchtime, we had like five or six. It was an amazing experience. I am a true believer now. It really brought in the facets I've ever seen, the right candidates. And, of course, we hired the right person fast. ZipRecruiter is rated number one by employers in the U.S., and you better believe Twit will always use it. In fact, number one on Trustpilot, over 1,000 reviews. That's pretty good. Find out what you need, who you need, to take your business to the next level in 2019 and hire them fast at ZipRecruiter. Right now, you can try it free. Again, you got to go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit for that free offer. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Show your support and help build the best business you can with the best people from ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. It's the smartest way to hire. By the way, it cheered her up immensely.
Not doing the books
made her very, very, very happy. Strangely enough, Congress has been busy with other stuff or not doing other stuff. Didn't pass a copyright extension law. So as of a couple of days ago, a number of works from everything from 1923 became public domain.
Oh, my gosh. What falls inside
great
that umbrella?
I'm sorry, 1922. Yeah.
The Great Gatsby. Yeah,
Steamboat Willie would be included.
Well, Steamboat Willie's 1924, so this is what will be interesting to watch. There is no Sonny Bono anymore to get the copyright extension law. That's what happened last time.
There will only be one Sonny Bono.
It's the first time in 21
Sonny
years.
Sonny Bono Memorial Ski Run.
In 21 years, the first time that anything's gone into the public domain. More than two decades. That's how significant this is.
I'm with Alex on this, because if you create something, fine. But give it 25 years, and then it goes public domain. Some of the arguments they're putting forward for 80 years public domain, or not even maintaining the copyright after the author's dead?
That's ridiculous.
F. Scott Fitzgerald is no longer benefiting from The Great Gatsby.
Oh, but his estate is.
Right. But it's
The Great Gatsby, January 2021, 2 years off. Rhapsody in Blue next January.
Excellent.
The Sun Also Rises in 2022, but the big one is going to be January 1st, 2024. That's when not only Steamboat Willie, but also Superman and Batman and Snow White.
Whoa, that's going to lead to an awful lot of good films.
Well, this is the interesting thing. In the past, of course, Disney based their entire work on other people's work. By the way, I should point out Steamboat Willie was stolen.
True.
But Grimm's Fairy Tales, public domain. They were able to make Cinderella and Snow White. But then they pulled the ladder up behind them, made it copyright.
Exactly.
And every time this has come up, they've got Congress to extend it. The last one was Sonny Bono's Copyright Term Extension Act in 1999. Mm. That added 20 years, keeping everything locked up until January 1st. So it is 1923 works are now coming into public domain.
I'm probably in the minority.
First time in decades.
But I'd love to see a blockbuster movie of The Great Gatsby starring Superman, Batman, and Snow White.
I did not know where that was going. That would
be a great opening party scene.
I would watch that.
By the way, I have to correct myself. Sonny Bono was already dead when the copyright extension term was passed.
Okay.
He died in 1998. So Congress, to honor him.
I see.
What an honor, too.
Named honoring the copyright a wife beater. Such a different time in those days.
It was a different time back in the 20th century. So this is interesting. Apparently, you can take some credit for this. Yeah. The internet takes some credit for this. Mm. The Motion Picture Association of America, the Recording Industry Association of America, the Authors Guild, all of whom have been ones to lobby for the extension in the past, gave up. It's not something we're pursuing, said the RIAA, because there's now a well-organized grassroots lobby against copyright extension.
Mm-hmm.
There are large business interests, Google, now on the anti-expansion side, also a wide popular movement they can tie it into. The internet activism.
Yep. The Netroots.
Netroots. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good thing.
This is why sites like TechDirt, They really keep tabs. Yeah.
Thank you,
on
Mike
this
Masnick.
Stuff. Yeah,
I really appreciate the work
Super
he does there.
Super important acts of journalism that do lead to change in how we think about things. Because the RIAA is not notorious for its cuddliness, its politeness, and its willingness to give away profits. Yeah. But we're going to get some of our stuff back into our own culture that we made and shouldn't be tied to commercial
demand. It was interesting. The movie, the motion picture ass of America really did back down on this, and they were just like, you know, we're not going to win. It's costing us too much. Also, it's costing them an awful lot in terms of legal fees and false positives. When the RIA did that big anti-piracy campaign, started suing people for downloading, they lost a ton of money on that. The only people that got rich on that were lawyers. And they also created a massive amount of ill will. I mean, Metallica's reputation took a massive hit.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Lars Ulrich said it was the biggest mistake I ever made.
Yeah.
Pursuing Napster.
He was talked into it.
Yeah, that includes his last, the last album. But no.
how much more time do we have on the show to debate that point?
All right, let's talk CES, and then we're going to wrap it up. None of you were at CES.
It was a condition of my job when I joined the Register that I did not do CES.
That's what I'm wondering. Are you being punished or rewarded? It kind of unofficially began last night with the CEA, the Consumer Electronics Association, own event.
Right.
They do a preview, and then tonight it'll be PepCom. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow night it'll be Showstoppers. There will be tomorrow.
Tomorrow night is also the press day, which is when they do all the press conferences, and traditionally the Wi-Fi network falls over at 10 a.m.
and that list is the best part if you're in the press, because that's where there's free alcohol and free shrimp and stuff like that.
Yeah, but also there's Sony, LG, a lot of companies are doing press conferences tomorrow.
Yeah.
Then Tuesday the show floor opens.
Yeah.
And then everybody goes home exhausted.
Yes.
Having walked 400 miles.
And the ladies of negotiable infection take their prices back down to the pre-CES levels.
Yeah, I just was looking at prices. It was funny. I was looking at
hotel prices. Not.
Yes, tonight, okay. I could get a room in Las Vegas for $119, but if I try to do it Tuesday night, it's over $1,000 at the hotel I was checking. Same room. This is the Cosmopolitan.
Surge prices.
Yeah, you got to love those algorithmic pricing.
I've talked to a couple of cabbies who say we hate CES.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
He says, on the other hand, they're a lot more fun than the NAB show attendees. So there's their good thing there. That's the broadcaster's show. Apparently, the CES folks are more.
Well, they have more corporate cards, I think. Tech is doing
more to
well
spend.
At the moment.
Yeah.
DEF CON and Black Hat really freaks out the cab drivers.
They expect 180,000 attendees, but many more will be there. Well over 200,000 people, actually maybe even 250,000 people coming into town for this.
Mm.
So you don't want to go?
No.
Why not?
It's too big. There is too much rubbish there, like the internet-connected toilets and the rest of it.
By the way, that's one of the big, in fact, probably will be the one that gets all the coverage, the new Kohler toilet, Alexa-enabled toilet.
Yes.
The breakout product so far.
The possibly most ridiculous product of the year so far. But it's basically too big. From a journalist's perspective, the press day is an absolute nightmare because you've got to queue for 2 hours to get into a press conference, and then when you get to the door, you're told the thing is full. But the conference floor itself, it's a sales conference. It's not about, it's about introducing new products and trying to get buyers to sell them. If you want to get mobbed on the CES show floor, you wear a buyer's badge. You don't wear a press badge.
Yeah.
They don't want the press there, and they make that fairly clear.
And most of the products announced are not available yet, may not be available ever. A lot of them are just prototypes.
And because you've got 200,000 people there, everyone comes back with a case of conference cough.
And the biggest reason not to go if you're press is... The reason I don't care that I'm blacklisted from Apple events either. There's literally nothing
you
that you're going to... Yeah.
No.
You're literally nothing Respect. You're going to find out there. Thanks. that isn't available just with a quick, easy search.
Exactly. I mean, I think there are people listening and watching who are saying, oh, you guys, it's just sour grapes. You don't get to go. You just don't want to go.
Are you kidding? I would pay not to go to CES.
I love sour grapes.
Yeah.
The reason
he's
why
looking at the line in front of him. The reason why I'm glad I don't go anymore is that I always went there, but I never really covered consumer electronics. And so I was always kind of faking it. And I would get assigned to these keynotes, like, go cover the Qualcomm keynote. Mm. So I would get crammed into the back of some godforsaken conference room in some terrible hotel, sit on the floor with bad Wi-Fi, and write about chips.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand. And that was part of my day. It was just
so we're all
experience.
Basically PTSD.
Yes.
That's the reason.
Well, exactly. But also, it's for a different audience in that,
Should we be paying attention, though, to the news that's coming out of CES this week? Because there will be a lot of it.
There will be a lot of it. I would do your own, find out what you're interested in. But expect the fact that half the products that are reported on will never exist. The other, a quarter of the rest of them are going to be so poor as to be unusable. And stuff like the internet-connected toilet is just so full of,
thousands of articles about it.
Oh, yeah.
And there's nothing that going there will give you that you can't get from those thousands of articles.
Exactly.
And so it's just
there's no hands-on or butt-on testing in this case. But
but they're not going to let journalists drop trow and give it a shot, are they?
What if you didn't ask, though? What if you just went for it? What would happen then? You tell me. You're blacklisted from
the It's not always easier to ask for forgiveness in these cases.
Can we get a backup unit in here?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, so what is that site you're showing, Carson? Because I want to see this. IEEE Spectrum. Wow. Well, that's the International Association of Engineering.
Last year it was the Internet Connected Hairbrush, and
Smart Yogurt. What?
The Bizarre Toothbrush, the Smart Yogurt Maker, and Wrist Wearables on my must see list, writes Tekla Perry. Really? I think there will be a lot of IoT things, I'm sure.
Oh, bounce.
Hilbey's Gobi 3 wristband. It promises to track calorie intake, hydration, and stress along with sleep and activity. Calorie intake. See, I would get a wristband that was telling me how much I'd eaten.
How does it do that, though?
It doesn't. It's not going to work.
I was going to say, it's not like you can say, right, okay, you put that amount of dressing on, that amount of salad, therefore that's that amount
of calories. It can tell by the tilt of your wrist how much dressing.
It's
not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem, is these companies promise everything.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing. They promise the moon and deliver
Ember's
little.
Wave bracelet is a bracelet that heats and cools because they claim if your wrist is hot or cold, the rest of you follows.
I've obviously never met my wife. She has hands like ice at night.
I don't want a shame bracelet. I don't want to strap things on to tell me that I'm a fat jerk.
A shame bracelet.
You need that chicken tender? I don't think so.
Perry also writes, the Keurigization of Everything, or KOE, right. Once again meets the Internet of Things, IoT, to spawn a kitchen gadget. Yomi's Yogurt Maker is the KOE IoT winner this year. Make it home yogurt. I don't know if this is going to take off. It can produce the currently popular Greek-style yogurt, and the pods dispose of themselves by dissolving in the milk. Oh, just what I want.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Packaging in my yogurt.
Into the milk.
Eliminating waste and avoiding a common complaint against the coffee pod gadgets.
The worst Keurigization that I've seen is a tortilla maker, which has the masa comes in a little canister and has different flavors, jalapeno or whatever. So it's like they're trying to find that niche market of people who want the convenience of store-bought tortillas, or rather the junk food aspect.
You're not talking about the Roadie-matic.
No, it's called I don't know what it's called. It came out a year ago.
When is this coming? I was told we would be getting one. Yogurt when is maker? Our Roadie-matic coming? This makes Roadie, which are the flat pancake breads. But I mean, it could be also Roadie Puri pizza.
It's not going to be Roadie. The whole point of
pita tortillas.
You have a giant clay pot and you light fires around it and you slap it to the side. That's what makes it Roadie.
Well, they've already made 37,732,371 Roadies.
It's sure the most popular. But were they edible? That's the question.
One guy making all that.
Well, we're getting one. I don't know if that'll be part of the CES. Lumen's breath analyzer for a mere $250.
When you do the Roadie-matic, can I come on that week?
Yeah.
I will eat that.
Mr. Carbohydrate, you do not eat carbs.
I eat lots of carbs. Actually, that's a lie.
I could tell you're keto, baby.
You skipped the top product
of drinking
CES.
Coke.
What's the top product of CES?
The toothbrush.
The toothbrush that cleans your teeth in 10 seconds?
Yeah. But here's another example. I covered this 8 months ago on my newsletter when it was on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And... you know, it's like old news.
This is the promise of CES.
Wait a minute. The whole reason this can do it in 10 seconds is because the brush goes all the way around your teeth.
Oh, it brushes goodness. Every tooth at
it
the same time.
It brushes them all at once. That's so stupid.
Yeah. So hang on. It's basically a mouth guard with bristles.
It's a car wash for your face.
It sounds like an assault.
Yeah.
All right, let's see the video, Carson. Let's see the video for the Y brush. Why not? How does it brush the inside of your teeth?
It's a good name because I'm like, why?
Why? Why? Oh, by the way, very important, optimal toothpaste distribution or OTD.
Three modes of sonic vibration. I know certain people would be happy with that.
And this is how everybody in the 21st century is going to look. Oh, it has bristles on both sides. That's why. All done.
Good grief.
Deep cleaning action. All done.
How lazy do you have to be?
What if you have a crown?
What's the base method? It's antibacterial. It's waterproof. You know, anything with soap on it is antibacterial, by the way.
Yes.
Right? You know.
But it's like anything can be part of a calorie-controlled diet, you know. Yeah. Like,
I thought I wasn't going to Twit. CES. I didn't have to deal with all of this stuff. And now we're bringing CES
I'm making you...
Suffer through
it.
All right.
All right,
and
well,
you know, the thing is, people are watching that now. People are watching the podcast or listening to the podcast thinking, yeah, it sounds like actually I could go.
I'd like to see that, too. I should point out the one reason that crap like this gets so much press is because it is featured at these two pre-show events.
Yes.
Pepcom and Showstoppers.
Yeah.
And a little bit less at the CEA event. Yeah. And press is lazy. And they want to file early. So they go to these pre-show events. Mm-hmm. Whatever's nearest the door, that's going to get all the attention.
In defense of the press, though, I mean, you go to CES and basically...
You have not a chance of getting
around. Well, there's 100,000 things to cover. And it's like, which tiny fraction of a percentage are you going to cover? You have to decide. Mm. The companies that actually pay money to be in these events... are not going to be the no-name...
$10,000 in many cases.
So if they're putting up money like that, there's something behind it. They're much better than average as a CES product if they're in
If you see a product at certainly...
Plus the food is much better.
I mean, if you see a product at the Pepcom or the other parties, you know that they are almost certainly going to make it to final production. And as you say, the food and drink is very good.
The only reason this comes to mind is because a couple of years ago, we sent a couple of reporters down to CES, and they came back. The top story was the happy spoon or the happy... Yeah. The haptic...
The vibrating spoon. The
vibrating
or something.
Spoon. Because it was the first thing in the door at Pepcom. There it is. Whatever happened to that? The happy fork?
It's a weight loss fork?
What is it? Automatically just go like that when it thinks you've had enough.
I don't think it took the world by storm. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Emblematic of everything CES.
Right? Yeah.
It's a smart fork, everything a smart we've toilet, talked about. And the whole world's dumber.
Everything we've talked about. There you go. It's really a junk show. But there will be a lot, I think, of IoT stuff. There'll be a home automation stuff, as there always is. Cars are huge at CES and a lot of automation and head ends and all sorts of things.
It's also worth it.
TVs will be big.
I mean, one of the things I did find, coming back onto TVs, I was there, I don't know if anyone else was there when the whole 3D TV push was.
Yeah.
I mean, CES was all about 3D
over.
TVs.
Yeah. That's and over. You know what it is this year? 8K.
Ugh.
8K. Christ. That's the big technology.
Yeah, too many
year.
K.
8K.
Yeah,
I mean, 5K and 8K? 5G and 8K.
Yeah. 5G and 8K. It's a match made in heaven. Yeah. We will have next week Father Robert Ballaser, who is at CES. He has a deal with God. He's allowed to come to CES once a year and then come be on our show to talk about it. Also, Sherilyn Lowe, who's great and also will be, I think, have just back from CES, and Stacey Higginbotham, who will also, she covers IoT. She's on our Twig show. All three of them will be here next week to talk about CES.
Which we've just set up for them.
What a setup, you guys. This is going to be a show to
just
remember.
Just make sure you've got your vitamins up to spec and, you know, everyone's using hand cleanser because you always come back sick
from
CES.
I'll be wearing a mask. Yeah, it's true. Hey, this has been a lot of fun. You guys are some of my best friends and it's great to see you. Alex Wilhelm lives in my childhood home. He's living the dream. He's editor-in-chief at Crush Base News. And
we need to get me a new factoid at some point.
Sounds slightly creepy.
That's the greatest factoid ever. He's not squatting there. He's living there legitimately.
True. I pay taxes. So
yeah, you pay taxes. And in Rhode Island, that's not an insignificant amount of money. Property taxes are steep. We thank you so much for being here continue to do great work at Crush Base News. Thank you for all of that, too. Mike Elgin, he is our gastronomad, gastronomad.net, elgin.com, writes, as you can see, for a lot of publications, but he does it on the road. He's always traveling. Back to Mexico City?
Back to Mexico City. Please join us. It's already filling up in March. And all I can promise is the time of your life. Eating, drinking all day, learning.
Go to
exploring the best stuff ever.
Gastronomad.net and click on experiences. And March 26th through the 31st. And it's a small group.
And that margarita is actual size on your screen. So,
actual size?
It's huge.
Come on, Mike. I'm doing dry January at the moment.
I've never been happier for the surface.
But really,
it's huge.
These experiences, if you're a foodie, this is unlike. family show. He actually happened. Your tongue did a gesture. Which...
that was a tongue gesture.
Don't okay. lick your screen.
It's hard not to when it's a margarita the size of your head.
I'm doing dry January at the moment. This is painful.
Just talk to me. I'll work you through it.
Yeah, yeah.
But we learned to make tacos from one of the greatest chefs in Mexico. Oh, we learned all about chilies. We like everything. We do, it's like amazing.
I can't wait. Gastronomad.net. I want to do Morocco. You're doing Morocco next. Prosecco again. Provence. Cava Barcelona. Incredible.
We love those wine countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder why.
Wine countries are best countries.
And Ian Thompson, who is the king of the English breakfast. If it comes to blood sausage.
My mother will be so proud.
Back bacon. Soggy toast. Scrambled eggs. A cool.
No, never scrambled, always fried.
Fried. Pardon me. He's the man to go to. You'll find his work at theregister.co.uk. He's news editor there, and it's always a pleasure to have you.
Oh, it was great fun being here, Leo.
Yeah. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon. We're back in action now, the 2019 episode. I didn't even mention it, but this is episode 700.
Wow.
I don't know if that makes it you know, you're all in the 700 club.
That's right.
Does that mean something else over here?
Yes, it does. We do the show every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's 2300 UTC. We'd love it if you watch live. You're always welcome to. You get that way. You get all the stuff we edit out later at twit.tv/live. We have audio and video live streams. If you do that, irc.twit.tv. You could join in with the kids in the back of the room as they talk about the show. Let's see what else. If you don't get here on time Sunday afternoon, we have on-demand versions. You can always have everything we do. Really, that's what a podcast is on-demand. Audio and video available at our website, twit.tv, or subscribe in your favorite podcast application. We don't have an official Twit app. There are a few unofficial and very good Twit apps on all platforms, Android, iOS, even Apple TV. There's a very good one. Actually, there's three or four very good ones.
And Chromecast and Chrome extension.
Yep. But you can always just use whatever podcast application and subscribe. That way you'll get it the minute it's available Sunday evening. Thanks for being here. It's good to see y'all.
Good fun.
Good to see you. Another Twit is in the can.
This is amazing.
We made it.